Hello and welcome to episode 5 of the Adeptus Terra podcast. I'm Matt.
And I'm Sam.
And this episode is called New Year, New Start, as we're in 2015.
We made it.
Yeah, we made it. I was going to say the same thing. We had an awesome year last year. We started the podcast in October, and I think we've learned quite a lot in the last kind of 4 episodes.
Mm.
And it's exciting to be here at the start of 2015 with another episode, and we look forward to a fully packed year.
Yeah, it was great to be able to hear feedback from you guys on the Facebook page, and it really helps us to really know what you guys are thinking and what you kind of think of the show, like the quality of the recording and everything we hear. We do try and improve upon, so make a better show.
Yeah, completely. I mean, the feedback's been great, like you said. Just got some good kind of dialogue going the other today, actually, with a guy called Paul showing off his Ultramarines. They look really cool, so. Thanks for that, Paul. We really want to push the Facebook page, and you'll probably hear us say it about 50 times in this episode, so I won't say it now. We're going to go straight into our first segment, I guess.
Yeah.
Awesome. Hey, guys. Matt from the Adeptus Terra podcast here. Just want to take this moment and advertise our Facebook page with you. If you want to get involved and share your thoughts and your feelings about this podcast, about what you'd like to see, or even share some of the stuff you're up to. We love seeing your hobby progress. Go to www.facebook.com/ The Adeptus Terra Podcast, and we'll see you there. So this is our first segment of the show, the news from Terra. This is where we just chat about kind of what we've been up to, really. So, Sam, what have you been up to since Christmas?
I have had so many games.
Yeah.
It's unreal. So, since we last recorded on the just after the 18th of December, our gaming club had a whole day worth of gaming.
So yeah, that was really cool.
10 in the morning till 7 at night, I think it was, and just carried on playing all day.
Then we went to the pub.
I got 2 games in, one 3K against Matt, and then another game against Ben.
Yeah.
Which was really cool to do.
Yeah, I played Liam that day as well, after playing you. So, yeah, 2 games each, that's cool.
Yep, and then pretty much just been hobbying Matt like mad since then. Doing quite a lot of painting, I think this is the most games I've had in probably a year.
Yeah, January's been good for games.
Mm.
More for you than me, but yeah. Well, let's start with the inevitable purchases.
Okay, so I have purchased nothing.
Oh, why do you do that to me?
Because it makes you look
awful.
Better, because you have purchased stuff.
Cool. I have purchased some stuff, yes. I was joking with Tim the other day, our friend Tim, and he said every time it gets to the purchases, he just hears the word eBay.
Yeah.
And this month has definitely been another eBay month. I mean, I start off with the Scions that I got from you. For Christmas. They're really cool, especially after episode 4 talking about the Tempest of Scions, and yeah, it got me really fired up for that project, and I got my first box, so I built my command squad.
Cool.
So I'm really happy with that. I got an orc truck from eBay.
Cool.
Which was awesome, nice and cheap, but just had to, do you know what, in the photo it looked like it wasn't painted very well.
Yeah.
And I thought, right, I'm going to have to completely strip it, start again. But it turned up and it was actually all right. So after a bit of weathering, a bit of washing, kind of some of the techniques that go on top of an all right paint job.
Yeah.
It really is kind of, it's now up to my level, which isn't that high, but it was, yeah, I'm pretty happy with it. And it took maybe 20 minutes.
Good. There was the quick win model.
Yeah, it really was. Yeah. What else did I get? I got a Hive Tyrant, my second Hive Tyrant for my Gene Stealer list. Well, I guess it is my Tyranid list. So that's really cool. Just need that barbed Hyrodoor and my list is done, which is exciting.
How much is the barbed Hyrodoor?
£100.
£100.
Yeah.
It's a lot of selling.
It is, yeah. Well, yeah, I've been all right. One of my friends has been buying up some stuff from me,
okay,
which is really good. So that's going to kind of pay the way for that big kit,
right,
which is always nice and fun. Just getting rid of all the old stuff so you can get a big shiny new thing. But yeah, I got that from eBay. I got a Forge World Heavy Chainsword, you know, the two-handed chainswords.
Yeah.
That, come from like the Heresy upgrade weapon kits.
Oh, right, okay. For what?
I needed it for my Ragnar Blackmane conversion.
Right, okay.
And I got that through yesterday, actually. So
good.
It's on my table ready to kind of do a bit of converting.
On Monday.
So yeah, Monday hobby day.
Cool.
So yeah, I got that. What else have I got on my list? I bought a turret gun, I guess. I can't really think of a decent word for it. You've seen it.
Yeah, probably...
anti-air artillery gun thing?
Yeah, a quad cannon?
Yeah, maybe.
No, it's not quad, is it? It's only two.
It's only two,
a dual cannon.
Yeah. It's basically a giant gun that aims at the sky.
Yeah, made of MDF.
But yeah, it's an MDF kit, and it's the first MDF kit I've ever worked with. And I was quite nervous, but it was like £5. So I thought, why not? I'll get it. It looks quite sizable. And I'm really chuffed with it. It took some working out. It didn't come with instructions, which, you know, you kind of realize how much you like instructions when you don't get them.
Well, all the best furniture comes in flat packs, so they come out instructions. So it's kind of like a flat pack model.
It was definitely a flat pack model, yeah. And yeah, didn't take that long to build. I'm pretty happy with it. I just need to spray it up and get it painted. But yeah, that worked out pretty good. I bought some KR multi-case foam.
Did you get that?
I ordered that. Oh, I haven't got it yet. I ordered it yesterday, maybe.
Same. What's this the case?
I got a Fire Raptor tray for my Space Wolf Fire Raptor.
Good, good.
Which finishes off my Space Wolf kind of contingent being cased.
Good.
Which is good. I got a Bard Herodor one because I thought, why not? I'm getting one. So I might as well get that. I got a vehicle tray one for monstrous creatures, and then I got 3 or 4 Terminator trays for all my Gene Stealers.
That's cool.
So yeah, so my nids are kind of pretty much there cased as well now, which is awesome.
Are you bringing them down to not tomorrow on Saturday?
Yeah. We're going to have a game, aren't we?
Right, yeah. Nids. Right, so I need to do. Is it 2K?
Yeah, 2K, we right. said.
2K game, yeah. Guard versus nids.
Yeah, so after all of that, one other purchase. Okay. I have finally bought my ticket for Salute.
See, I'm a little bit angry because you didn't tell me you were buying your ticket for Salute this month. Otherwise, I would have bought my ticket for Salute this
month. Well, you still can buy your ticket for Salute.
Yeah, I'll do it tomorrow.
Yeah.
And then it can go on next month.
Yeah, it's nice and easy. You just print it out or get a mobile version.
Do you?
It's e-ticket or mobile ticket.
Ah, that's cool.
On the website, and it's £10 or £15 on the day, but it takes longer to get in, and why pay £5 more when you can just get it?
So are they still doing the bag?
I guess. I'm not sure. Mm. I didn't say anything. I didn't look, to be honest.
No.
But yes, for those that don't know, Salute is a gaming convention in London.
Run by the South London Warlords?
Yeah, I think so. We probably get it wrong every time, but that's who we think run it.
Yeah.
And it's just, you know, wargaming, hobby, tabletop stuff.
Yeah.
There's lots of different companies there.
I think it's cool because it's not just a 40K convention.
Yeah.
So you get stuff. So last time we went, we sampled a few other games, got some scenery made for those games, but actually really easily transferred across to 40K. So it meant that it's not just for 40K. So it enables
you
to
get to be a bit creative
piece.
And see some stuff you wouldn't normally see.
I'm hoping Anvil Miniatures will be there again.
Yeah, I think they will be. Because you've got those for your Inquisition force.
Yes, my Acolytes.
So that's really cool. But yeah, so I'm pretty stoked I got that. And that's all printed out at home, ready to go. But yeah, so I've been a bit busy in purchasing. Again, it makes me sound awful, but I haven't spent that much, really. I've been, you know, eBay is my friend. That's all I'm going to say. So you haven't purchased much, but
no.
Have you built anything?
Well, I have managed to get from my girlfriend, the box that I was talking about last time was, I didn't know what it was. It was two tanks.
Oh, yeah, I remember.
It was two tanks next to each other. So I got a Lehman Russ.
Not the Titan, then.
No, not the Titan. I got the Lehman Russ Battle Tank and Icarmira, which is really cool. So they managed to get built in this month. I did them all in one evening, just nice and quick. It's a tank kit. They're not exactly difficult to put together. So they went together, so that's all I've really built. I'm trying to slow down my building so that I'm building and painting.
Yeah.
So I'm painting more to counteract how much I've built and it's not painted.
Yeah.
So that's pretty cool. So I've got a lot more in painting.
That's cool.
What about you? How much have you built?
Let's see. So I built the Scions that you got me into the command squad. I found that kit really tricky, actually. I remember you saying that when you got a box.
Yeah, they go together horribly.
They're very interesting in the way they go together. You have to be very careful with the numbers and things. Where I did the command squad, it was a bit easier because they're kind of special weapons and things like that, so it wasn't that hard to mix them up. But yeah, I could imagine building normal Scions with all the hotshot weaponry being quite difficult with all the tubing and cabling and everything. So yeah, they were interesting, but got those built pretty quickly. I added a boss pole to an orc knob. For my orc force, which was cool, nice and easy. Just put it on and painted it up because the orc knob was already painted. I've also been working on the orcs list, actually. Me and Sam have been doing a project for, well, blimmin' hell, over a year now.
Probably two.
Do you reckon two?
I reckon it's over two.
Wow.
I think it's possibly going into three.
That's crazy.
It's getting closer to three. So the Grey Knights versus the Orcs.
Yeah.
And it's sort of, it's gone, it's my fault. It's my fault that it's not progressing faster. admittedly, because because it's Orcs, I wait until Matt has basically finished and then start building mine. Because I've only been building like six models. And with the drop of the new Grey Knight Codex, it's basically changed my entire list.
Yeah.
And it's made me go more guys on the table. I think I've maybe trebled my feet on the floor.
It's interesting. I like the new Grey Knight Codex.
Yeah.
I really do. Keep stumbling over my words this evening. Must try harder. But yeah, I adjusted my Orcs list in danger of rambling to something I just preferred, a bit more mech. Few more units rather than big chunky units. Still got lots of boys, but they're kind of spread out a bit better, I think. So we'll see when we eventually get around to having that game.
How much have you got left to paint?
I have one Orc knob and one Orc looter.
Right,
so two inventory models.
I better start buying stuff then.
Yeah, you're probably in that place now.
Right, okay, cool.
Yeah, yeah. You got stuff to talk about.
Yeah.
In the buying section, it's not just me.
Yeah. No, it makes you look better. I mean,
but yeah.
Better.
So yeah, other than that, like I said, the turret gun MDF cannon thing I built and built with PVA glue that Sam nicely let me borrow.
Did you use it?
Yeah, I used the PVA for the turret.
Yeah, but as in what on the turret? So you were saying I know
pretty much the whole thing.
Oh, okay, I thought we were talking. You said you didn't need any at that point.
No, I used it for most of the kit, but there was a couple of bits that you just wanted to dry like instantly.
Yeah,
so I just used super glue. And it worked perfectly. Like, you can't see any of it.
I thought, doesn't super glue make it swell?
But have you seen the finished one?
Yeah, it doesn't look like it, obviously.
So
but
it's worked.
Okay.
So, yeah, it's just, there's a few bits that were really fiddly, and if you didn't glue them in place immediately, I couldn't imagine holding it for 2 hours. As soon as you walked away, it just fell off.
Right, helpful. Like,
so it was, just needed super glue, but most of it was PVA, and it went together well.
Right, painting. I have managed to... I think it was after last time we recorded, I resprayed my Wyverns.
Yes.
So they got resprayed. I used frog tape to master tape them off so they didn't get covered over.
Yeah, so what is frog tape?
Frog tape is effectively painter's masking tape. So the masking tape you'd use on the wall if you're, say, going around the edge of a door frame or something. It means that when you pull it off, you don't pull off the paint that is on the wall already. So really good for modelling because it means that you can cover up stuff like the tracks that I wanted to keep. And it worked really well. It was sticky, so it stayed on. But then as soon as I needed to peel it off, came off, left all the paint, it was good. So they got resprayed.
Good.
Now they're repainted and finished.
Yeah, and they match. I've seen them.
They now match every other tank in the army. I managed to paint both my Lehman Russ battle tanks. They are now both complete. And without trying to sound really pretentious, they're actually really nice. I really like them. They're not I don't think they're my best painted model to date. However, they fit in with the rest of my army. So I like my knight. My knight is also finished now. I finished.
Yeah, I really
him.
Like the base.
Yeah, yeah, so
the
I finished
crackle paint
him.
Works really well. What's it? Agrellon Earth.
Agrellon Earth. Yeah,
yeah, from GW.
Listen to episode two,
three.
If you
two
want
two or three,
two or three. Listen to both of them.
Yeah,
and you might find out how to use it. So that's why I got painted. I got the two wyverns, the two battle tanks, the finished base. I also did a wash over my Blood Angel Land Speeder because it looks a bit too clean.
Okay.
So I did a black wash. We actually really picked out the recesses on the vehicle. Obviously, it's quite it's not exactly a flat vehicle, so it makes
it's
really
quite
good.
Blocky. Yeah.
What else did I do? Just a little bit of just touch ups, really.
Okay.
So I went over and redid the straps that hold on the exhausts for the tanks my PASC model, which looked really good. Now.
Awesome,
but that's it. We're painting not a lot, but more than we're buying.
Yeah, I've had a bit of a spurt in painting, not crazy, but I've already mentioned I added a boss pole to one of my orcs, the orc was painted, so I very carefully glued the unpainted boss pole on and then painted it, and actually got away with it, which was nice.
Yeah.
So yeah, that worked out pretty well, and that's done. I started the other Orc knob, based him, and started putting on the metalwork, but that's as far as I've got with him. The looter I've just looked at and not touched because those models are really fiddly when built. Generally, it's the only kit that if I could go back, I would probably paint in parts. And this, I just don't do that, and really would because they're just so hard.
See, I've now come to that conclusion with painting my tracks. Sitting there painting tracks from beige to black is a nightmare.
Yeah.
And then having to repaint it all. I've just, next time I buy a tank, which will be next month, hopefully, I will just spray the track black and stick them on after I've finished basing it. Just because it's a nightmare, absolute nightmare.
I can imagine. Like I said, I did all the touch-ups on the Ork truck, did weathering, put the snow on the bottom and on the tracks.
Yep.
It's another Chimera that's been converted into open topped, so it's really cool. Just adds a bit of difference to the Force, which is nice. Other than that, I've been working on my Tyranid Tyrannophex.
Cool.
Which is a big monstrous creature. I've kind of decided to give up on the whole conveyor belt painting thing.
Good.
It was working really well for the first kind of skin color and the base coat, but after that, it was just soul destroying.
Yeah.
So now I've picked up the Tyrannophex and said, right, I'm painting this start to finish, and it's probably about 3/4 away there now.
Yeah.
So yeah, that should be done by next month. I'm gonna make that my thing.
Yeah.
That'll be done next month. But yeah, that's all I've painted so far.
I also did paint. Now Sanguinary Priests can't have Terminator armor. I've turned my Sanguinary Priest in Terminator armor into a librarian.
Really simple.
Just paint it blue.
Yeah, yeah.
Like every other bit that was red, just painted blue, and everything else said the same. It took me like 5 minutes, and now I have a librarian in Terminator armor.
Yeah, which is really cool. And we're talking about the Blood Angel Codex. For those that have listened to last episode, they already know. But yeah, we're going to be talking about the new Blood Angel Codex and kind of Blood Angels in general in our 40K Spotlight.
And I have just bought my ticket to Salute.
Yeah.
Easy. That was awesome. Really good.
Yeah, really easy, really quick. We're going to go to Salute. We'll be wearing our Adeptus Terra t-shirts. So if you guys are around at Salute, come and say hi. We would love to chat to you. We're probably going to hopefully hang out with the Overlords if they do what they did last year, which was just kind of go to a pub nearby, well, very nearby, and just hang out and chat. After meeting those guys late last year, it'd be cool to catch up with them again.
Absolutely.
So yeah, come and see us if you catch us and you're a listener. Anyway, games of the month.
Right. Okay. So I have had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 games this month. So
wow.
I'm only going to talk about a few of them.
Yeah. Okay. Well, shall we start with our game?
Yes. Yes. It was Blood Angel versus Space Wolves.
Yeah, it was really cool.
On my board.
Your realm of battle with painted scenery.
Very cool. Everything was painted on the board, which was awesome.
A few models that were not painted.
Let the team down?
Yeah, I did.
So, I don't remember. We just decided on deployments. We decided it would be...
We went Dawn of War, just straight long table edges.
Yeah, and then kill the hell out of each other.
Kill each other, yeah. We didn't even keep... I reckon you did, to be honest. I think you were a little bit ahead.
To be expected.
I started pulling it back.
Wow.
I did.
Wow.
Come on.
Maybe.
Yeah. But yeah, we just played 3K, let's shoot each other. It was, was it the first real game that you'd played your new Blood Angel codex?
Yes, it was. So it was a little bit finally.
And to be honest, it was probably the first big game that I played with my Space Wolf codex. I played a couple of thousand points, but if you listen to us before, you know how much I hate little games and I prefer the kind of 2K mark. So playing the 3K was awesome. I got to put some things on the board that I haven't yet from the new codex. So that was really cool.
Cool.
Should we go through our lists slightly?
Yep.
I need to go into Quartermaster.
Yeah. Let's have a look at mine.
3K versus you. So yeah, so I brought Ragnar Blackmane leading the force. Who else? I brought a Wolf Priest. I brought a Rune Priest, so basically Librarian and Chaplain, for those that don't know the Space Wolf Codex. I brought a Rifleman Dread. He's always done well for me, so he kind of makes my list quite a lot. I brought my Terminators, because I thought high point game, why not? A Lone Wolf in Terminator armor with a Thunder Hammer and Storm Shield, so he can be a bit of a pain if he gets there. I don't think he did in that game, but normally works quite well. Troop wise, I had 1, 2, 3 squads in drop pods, Grey Hunters, with melters and plasmas and all kind of things like that. I had 3 squads of Blood Claws as well, so 6 troops. I had 10 Jump Pack Marines or Sky Claws for us. What else? And then heavy support. This was my favourite section. I tend to find that the heavy support for the Space Wolves is my favourite section. Because I brought a Vindicator, which I love. I brought my Land Raider Redeemer. I brought a Longfang Squad, which tend to perform quite well. I brought a Predator, and I got to field my Fire Raptor.
Yes. The Space Marine Killer.
Yeah, it performed very well.
Well, first time it came on, it killed six.
Something like that, yeah.
Six Assault Marines. So, yeah performed very well. Yeah. Is that all yours?
Yeah, that was my whole 3K list.
So I brought four HQs. I bought Mephiston, a Librarian Dreadnought, a Sangarinu Priest, and Astarath.
I thought I'd killed Astarath and we realised he had Lookout Sir or something.
Yeah.
Is it something like that? I can't remember.
One of them, and yeah, he didn't die. But that's cool, because Astarath never really dies. he just gets a little stronger each time. So Elites, I had 15 Death Company, all with Jump Packs, which meant they could get up there really quickly. They all had just normal standard layouts, so Chainsaws, Bolt Pistols, etc. Two Death Company Dreadnoughts, just to really go and annoy, because that's what they do now. In my opinion, they got a little bit weaker.
We'll get to that.
Okay. two five-man scout squads with sniper rifles and a
camo cloak.
There we go. Cool. So nice and cheap troop choices. I only need two troop choices. Fast attack. I bought three assault squads of 10 with bog standard two metals in each. Chainswords, bolt pistols, don't really need anything else in those now. A land speeder and a full bike squad of 8 bikes and an attack bike.
And that had a captain and a sanguinary priest in it, didn't it?
That didn't have the captain, it only had a sanguinary priest.
Oh, only the sanguinary priest.
That's how I normally run them, but now because the sanguinary priests are HQs, having two HQs in a unit seems a little bit OP.
Yeah, it does a little.
A little bit not needed.
Yeah.
In my heavy sports.
Oh, wow. You way outnumbered me on this game.
In my heavy sports, I ran 3 Bile Prids and 2 Vindicators. Again, my normal standard layout, so Twin Elite Assault Cannons and Heavy Bolt Responsons, and then a Demolisher Cannon with...
And they were fast vehicles, weren't they?
All fast. All had the overcharged engines on, which is another change in the Blood Angels.
Yeah, we'll get to that.
For me, it was a really good game. I really liked how... Mephiston performed. Now they've got their own powers, it was really good.
The powers were quite scary.
Yeah, because I was a little bit bummed when they got rid of the Codex powers for Blood Angels, because it felt that they lost their personality.
Yeah.
And now they've got the cards, I think that it really brought it back for me for Librarians. So it means I'm fielding them a lot more now, which is cool.
Yeah, which
that was
is really
probably
cool.
The highlight for my game.
Yeah, I mean, the game went quite crazy, to be honest. I got hit really hard early on. I lost quite a lot. I tell you this now, and I won't talk about what it does, but Quickening, which is their Primaris new psychic power, is absolutely disgusting.
Yes, it is.
We went, 6 turns?
Yeah.
And I think turn 5 and 6, I really started to claw back. Mm. So I had little left, but I had quite strong stuff left.
Yep.
So you were just slowly losing unit after unit, and I think I was catching up, but you might have just swayed it. I think for me, the highlight was my Rune Priest. So you probably don't remember this, but I really do. And my Rune Priest got into combat with your bike squad.
Yes.
And with Grey Hunters, but I'd lost the Grey Hunters to your bike squad and you'd lost a couple. And it was my Sanguini Priest. No, you've got a Sanguini Priest. It was my Rune Priest. Too many priests. that should be a joke there. But my Rune Priest was alone with 3 bikes and the Sanguini Priest.
Yeah,
and 3 rounds later, my Rune Priest came out victorious, and that was just really kind of awesome. He was a bit of a boss. And I think the turn he got out, he turned around and got shot in the face with a blood lance or a blood missile or a blood melter.
Something.
so that was a bit demoralizing. You know, heroes kind of get built and then torn down pretty quickly in the 40K universe.
Makes sense.
But yeah. So, yeah, it was just a really good, fun game, and I love playing 3K, to be honest.
Yeah.
It was nice to play each other. Doesn't happen that often.
No, not at all. So, what was one of your other games?
Okay, yep. So, I played Liam the same day. Liam's a guard player. Well, mainly a guard player. We played 2K. We played Big Guns Never Tire, so that's where heavy supports give up a victory point. We had Dawn of War deployment again. His list was Vendetta with a vet squad. He had Creed, the special army commander, a ton of guardsmen, something like 60, a vet squad on foot with plasmas, tank commander with Punisher. He had a couple of other Russes in the list, 2 basilisks, which are quite scary, and a Bane Wolf. So, yeah, I hate Bane Wolves. Playing Space Wolves as well. You know, I brought a list that was a bit different. I brought my Fire Raptor again. I brought Bjorn as my HQ, which was really fun. He's got really good in the Codex, in the newest Codex. He's pretty boss. And actually, my highlight of the game was him taking 5 involve saves against 5 las cannons and just passing them all on a 5+, and then wrecking 2 rust tanks the turn after.
Makes complete sense.
It was amazing. He just absolutely bossed it. But yeah, the game went quite well. I went on the attack straight away. I took 3 squads again in drop pods.
Yep.
So I kind of kept the core that I had in the 3K, but took out some of the fancy stuff.
Cool.
And yeah, just hit his lines. So he was kind of penned in and had to deal with my front forces. And then my back forces could walk up, you know, unaffected and get onto all the objectives, because I think we had 5 objectives in that game. It was pretty close throughout. I mean, Liam didn't panic. He tends to do that quite well. He just dealt with what he had to deal with and then moved on to the next target. And towards the end, I think we ended turn 5, and if we hadn't, he may have pulled it back.
Right, okay.
But I ended up beating him 12-3.
Good.
In victory points. So yeah, that was my second game.
Cool. I actually also played Liam.
Yeah.
So you'll see a theme. We played Liam a lot. He was back from uni, so that was quite cool.
Yeah.
So we had... It was a 2K game. The scenario was a Crusade. Crusade game? Is that a game?
Yeah, Crusade, yeah. That's the normal D3 plus 2 objectives.
Cool. Well, Crusade. And deployment was a Vanguard, so that's the corners.
Yeah, diagonals, basically.
The list was my guard list with the BA bike squad, basically.
Okay.
Nothing really too special.
So, yeah, just Blood Angel allies.
The Blood Angel allies of a bike squad, that was pretty cool. Liam ran 2 battle tanks, 2 vanquishers, 2 basilisks, a Bane Wolf, Vendetta, Chimeras, 70 guardsmen and 2 heavy weapons team. We were playing at Wayland Games, and we set the board up, and basically Liam just castled in the corner.
Yeah.
Put 70 guardsmen in front of 2 basilisks, so I couldn't kill him.
you learned from my game.
Yeah. So I couldn't kill him. Sent the Bane Wolf up the side to annoy me.
I hate those things.
Yeah. And then the battle tanks just shot my tanks, really. Just shot at me. It was just, which was quite good. My highlight of the game was definitely my knight running into the lines of the 70 guardsmen, punching a few tanks, killing 2 tanks. Liam then shot me a couple of times with las cannons, took off all the hull points. One guardsman, I think, punched me with a metal bomb. And then the knight exploded.
Oh, wow.
And took out quite a few of his men.
That's awesome.
Which actually, I was really underselling in terms of the explode radius. So yeah. I probably would have killed a lot more men.
Oh, had did I you get been... it wrong?
Yeah, so I was measuring the large, not the large, the next one up.
The old apocalyptic
template. I was using that and not the new one, which is
a bit bigger.
So yeah. I probably would have killed a lot more had I had the template and known. The end result was 7-6 to Liam. So Liam just pulled it off by one point. So that was quite cool.
Cool.
And your next game?
So what was that? That was your second game?
That's my first game.
Well, our one was the first game.
Well, I suppose if you count my crushing defeat, my crushing victory over you, then...
Yeah, all right.
It's the second game, then.
So yeah, my last game, I only got 3 games over January to kind of my shame compared to Sam's anyway. But yeah, I played our buddy Ben. He brought Tau. This isn't Imperial Fist Ben. This is our other friend Ben. And we played another 3K game. So yeah, lots of big games this month. And we got Big Guns Never Tire again and 5 objectives again. We got Vanguard Strike as well, which was the diagonal deployment. And he brought a kind of a Tau gun line list. So he had an Aegis defense line, 5 Fire Warrior squads, 3 behind the Aegis and 2 in Devilfish, 2 squads of Pathfinders, a Piranha, a squad of Kroot, which was cool to see. I quite like the look of Kroot. They don't really do too much, but they're quite cool. A Commander with 2 bodyguards, a Stealth team, a Crisis Suit team, who deep struck in with plasmas and caused problems. 2 hammerheads with the rail gun, so strength 10, AP 1, beast of a weapon. A riptide and a broadside team. So he had quite a lot of firepower in there. My list was kind of similar again. I brought Bjorn again because he's just been doing so well for me. And I didn't bring the Fire Raptor this time. Thought, you know, play 2 games, try something else. I brought Vindi, a Predator, a Longfang squad. I brought 3 squads of Bloodclaws again. And then I brought 5 squads of Greyhunters in drop pods. So I brought 5 drop pods to the party. And I also brought Ragnar Blackmane and a Wolfguard battle leader with the Armor of Russ, which is an awesome upgrade relic. Gives me a 2+ armor save and a 4+ invul.
Cool.
So quite nice on it. He's only a 2-wound model, but he tends to tank quite a lot. So yeah, and basically the game went really well. It was really fun. I seized the initiative again because of Bjorn. Now I rolled a 5 and I was like, oh, well, I haven't seized.
Yeah.
And then Ben went to me, oh, does Bjorn give you something special? And I went, oh, possibly. I remember him doing something like that. So I went to my codex, looked at it, and it's a +1 to your initiative roll. So,
huzzah.
So yeah, so I actually seized on a 5+. So I seized and 3 drop pods came down and kind of shot into some tanks and caused some mayhem. And again, it was a similar tactic that I used against Liam. Bring my front lines down. He has to deal with firepower and time in dealing with them. And then my back force can kind of advance the table unscathed.
Yeah, so the front lines effectively preoccupy.
Yeah.
And then the stuff you had to place back in the back lines can have the opportunity to come forward, which is cool.
Yeah, that's what worked. And I got onto objectives and then kind of sat there a bit out of range of his gun line. Mm. And I kept attacking him with the odd unit, but kept my main force back and just held and held and held. And, I mean, he was hitting back really strongly. Tower firepower is scary. And we went all the way to turn 7, and each turn he was clawing it back, clawing it back. I ended up winning 9-3, though, so I was really happy with that. The 2 highlights of the game that I want to share, to be honest, lowlights for me.
Right, okay.
But they were highlights of the game.
Right, okay.
So I had my Wolfguard battle leader come in his drop pod with 9 Grey Hunters, you know, kitted out, plasma guns, bolters, right in front of his gun line, and his ethereal unit. Now, his ethereal was his HQ.
Yep.
I didn't mention him in the list, actually. I must have missed him. But he was his HQ warlord.
Right.
And he was in a squad of about 5 fire warriors, because I'd taken some off as well. And I come down and I thought, do you know what? I could take him here. I could get warlord here. And this is turn 3, last drop pod in. And I shot and I hit with 3 dice, rapid fire bolters.
Cool.
And then out of those 3 hits, I got 1 wound. And out of that 1 wound, he made his armor save. The next turn, I watched the entire squad die to tau fire gun line nonsense. Just shots after shots after shots, and I watched the whole squad disappear. And it was just like, really, guys? Can you not hit a tau with a bolter? It was awful. It's like the Imperium's finest just suddenly were replaced with guardsmen. It was awful.
Guardsmen have their uses.
Well,
meat shields.
For dying, yeah. And that's what my squad did. Other than that, This is crazy, and this kind of shows the dice just weren't in my favor in this one combat. I charged Skyclaws, which are jump pack infantry, and they're basically like Death Company.
Death Company, yeah.
You know, they get the same amount of attacks, like 4 attacks on the charge, nasty bits of work, into a squad of Fire Warriors. Okay. So, you know, initiative 2, you know, nothing really. Tau die very easily in combat.
Yeah.
After 9 rounds of combat, the fire warrior team win and kill all my Skyclaws.
So what have we learned from this little thing?
Dice are evil.
Dice are evil. I hope you froze all those dice in water and then took them outside and smashed them.
I threw one out the window just to show all the others that I would get rid of them. No, not really. But yeah, so that was my 3rd game, and it was really fun, really chilled out. We played really slowly and just chatted about other things, life in general, and just it was really nice. It had that real feel of that kind of beer hammer, and yeah, that whole idea of just hanging out with a friend, playing a game, and just chatting. So yeah, it was probably one of the best games I've played in the last 6 months, probably. I was really happy with it. So thanks for that, Ben.
Cool. So my last game was against Liam again, but we sort of switched. He brought his Blood Angels, and I took my 2K of Guard. So my 2K of Guard is Paskin and Punisher with 2 Eradicators, 2 Lehman Russ Battle Tanks. I've shaken up a little bit and put a vet squad in a Chimera, a vet squad on the ground, both with plasmas. Yes. So one with plasma and one with melter, and a Vendetta gunship.
Yes, also a bit of anti-air.
Of course, a knight and a bane wolf as well. No, hellhound as well.
Hellhound.
Yeah, so that's my general 2K of guard list. Liam brought a blood angel list. He has got his own blood angels, so he sort of brought everything he had, and we pointed it up, and it actually miraculously came to 2,001 points.
Oh, wow.
So he brought a captain in Terminator armor, a librarian in Terminator armor, a Sanguinary priest for his HQs. The elites were a Terminator squad inside a Land Raider, which is cool. 12 Death Company Marines, just bog standard Death Company, a normal Dreadnought, two 10-man tac squads, one in a drop pod.
Okay.
Looks like an 8-man tac squad. I think that's because he only had enough to make up the 8-man tac squad. The 8-man tac squad, which I think took up a building just to annoy me and shoot me. a scout squad, like a 5-man scout squad with sniper rifles and camo cloaks.
It's the only way to run them nowadays, really.
Yeah, and then that, like I said before, Land Raider, bog standard, two twin link las cannons, etc.
Cool.
So quite a standard Blood Angel. Some would say you could arguably transfer that to any other legion and it would still be the same, other than Sanguinary Priest. But for me, that's not how I run Blood Angels. I run like the Baal Preds, the Assault Squads.
The really fast
attack.
Stuff.
And Liam doesn't. Liam runs more tac squads. So
yeah,
it's cool. It's a way of playing, isn't it? So it was a 2K game, like I said, Purge the Alien, Dawn of War deployment. How the game went? Well, the first turn, I had first turn, and I don't want to say annihilated him. I wounded him heavily enough that he could not recover.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Some games go that way, you know?
So the first turn, I blew up his Land Raider.
Yeah, that hurts.
Which killed a few of the TAC Marine and Death Company that was around it.
Yeah.
I killed half his Death Company squad, I think. I did a lot of damage with template weapons. The Lehman Russ.
Oh, you were
tanks.
Playing guard. Sorry, I'm thinking template weapons. Your Vindys must not have been in range.
No,
but you're playing guard.
So my battle tanks did a lot with the templates. Also, the eradicators did a lot to take off first and wounds.
When you say eradicators, you mean demolishers, right?
Yeah, sorry, demolishers. Yeah. I'm debating whether to switch them out for eradicators.
Oh, okay, cool. They
ran as demolishers, sorry, so they got the template weapons in that as well.
Yeah.
Also the Wyverns, so I forgot to mention those. They did a lot of damage to his troops. I killed a lot first turn.
Assuming Liam fought very valiantly and just kept going.
Oh, absolutely. He was like laughing away. Like he thought it was hilarious.
Yeah.
Like that's why I like playing Liam, even though he lost his Land Raider. Like
very chilled out.
Yeah, just very chilled out and sort of takes it, which is cool. I think I only lost a vet squad after I think it was four rounds of assault with Death Company.
So, Marines have not had a good month for assaulting.
No. And I lost the Wyvern in the last turn. Three vets from a building being shot by snipers.
That was quite convincing then.
Exactly. So it was very much that I was very lucky with what I was rolling. I think it was because Liam forgot his dice and his tape measure and his templates. So it meant that
he was
rolling all my stuff. So the dice...
Dice are evil, Liam.
Dice are evil, Liam. Yeah, so it was a good game. I actually really enjoyed it. The end result was 8-2 to me.
Okay, yeah.
I think the highlight for me was on four dice where I needed sixes to hit. I rolled four sixes,
took all the
whole points.
Your dice were hot and Liam's weren't even there.
Weren't even there. cool, so that was my last... Well, it wasn't my last game. That was one of the last games of the month.
It's worth noting that we said earlier on, right at the beginning of the show... that we're trying to always improve and we love your feedback. This is a new way of doing our battle reports, kind of making better notes so we remember what happens and can share it maybe a bit quicker than just rambling on. If you didn't like that and you preferred the way we were doing them in the early shows, please let us know. If you think of some other cool way we could do them, please let us know. It'd just be awesome to hear your thoughts. We didn't want it to kind of drag on for hours and hours telling you about all our games, but we wanted to share some of it with you, so hopefully you got that impression.
So your New Year commitments.
Yeah, I was going to say, we thought we'd do a New Year commitment thing. Saw a really good blog post about kind of New Year and set kind of 10 challenges. I'm going to set myself just two, I think. The first one is to finish all my projects. Now, what I mean by that, before everyone faints, because the people who know that how many projects I've got going at the moment,
and
the size
12.
Of them, not 12, but the idea of owning all the models that I've got in my lists, because I always work towards a list.
Good.
So,
quite frankly, the only way to collect.
That's no. No, cut that out of the show. You'll upset someone.
No.
But I forget you do the editing. But yeah, I want to own all my models that I've got written down in my list to finish them.
Just
finish
to clarify, the collection. Is this project you started? Because technically you've got a Night Lord's army on the way.
Oh, yeah, yeah. No. This is my Space Wolf / Imperium. So a couple of squads of Scions that I still need to get. My Orcs to 2K at the end of the year.
Cool.
So we're going to have to speed that up because it's taken us 2 years to get to 1.5. So yeah, we need to get that sorted. And my NIDs to 3,000 points, which is only a Barbed Heridor.
Yeah.
But the idea is to have all of those models and ready to play.
Cool.
And also cased.
Good.
So they're in foam and protected and stuff.
Got a lot of casing.
So not necessarily everything being painted, but everything being owned at least. This year is going to be a big one for me, and for various reasons. Some of you will know what that is, and I'm not going to share it now. But I won't be able to buy as many models, let's just put it that way. So I'm trying to kind of get them all done early part of the year so that then I can kind of paint and just game.
Tirelessly.
Yeah, with no sleep.
No sleep ever.
Anyway, so that's my first one.
Can you multitask?
Not really.
I don't know if you can. I don't think I've ever seen you be able to drink and talk at the same time.
Well, that's quite difficult for anyone to do. But yeah, my first one is just own all my models that I've got listed and I want to get and get them cased. That's my first commitment for this year. My second commitment is to be on top of our Facebook page. I've tried to do that today and I had a really good, cool discussion, as I've already shared.
What was that link again? Is it facebook.com/...
The Adeptus Terra podcast.
Ah, see, it sounds just like an advert.
The advert will come in after this segment.
Will it?
Yeah, yeah.
Right, I will try. You're going to have to make that happen. I'll try and remember it and edit it in.
So, go and like our Facebook page. We've had a few new likes and good conversations and feedback, like we've said. We just want more of that, so go and do that. And I'm going to try and stay on top of that for us.
Go forth and like.
Yeah. What about you? New Year commitments?
Mine are very much along the same vein. I want to try and finish off some of my projects. I want to finish my Guard army completely, which, although thinking about it, I haven't got very many vehicles, it still means that I've got to get them cased and basically to my standard of painted, and then probably go back and do more.
Yeah.
Just because I was looking at my knight the other day, and as though it pains me, it's really, really clean.
Yeah.
And I want to paint it rusty, not rusty, but flecked and scratched and stuff. But I'm really afraid.
Yeah, afraid of messing it up.
So I'll have to sort of finish that off, and I want to finish off my guard army to get that all done.
Yeah.
I need to go through a repoint and rearm my Blood Angel force to get them back up to 8K. As they've dropped, I think it was down to like 690 points or something ridiculous.
Yeah,
6,090 points, something ridiculous like that. So I've had a few ideas, a couple of land speeders, a couple of attack bike squadrons.
Yeah.
Add a little bit more of a fast element to my army. And then hopefully get them finished and get them painted back up. I'm not getting a Fire Raptor.
Get a Fire Raptor.
I won't get a Fire Raptor.
Go on.
A Thunderhawk would be more appropriate.
No.
Too much money. You don't want me to get a Thunderhawk?
No.
Right, okay.
Get a Fire Raptor.
When's Salute? Is it 29?
Yeah, yeah. I bought my Fire Raptor at Salute.
And how last year?
It's built. That's all I'm going to answer. Anyway, so they're our New Year commitments. They're the games we've played. That's the stuff we've built and bought and painted. Hope you enjoyed the segment. Hope we didn't go on for too long. We're going to take a quick break and come back with our second segment. Pain and joy of 40K.
Have you ever noticed you go really high pitch when you come to the end of segments? It's like, second segment?
Yeah.
Pain and joy of 40K?
I do a little bit. Anyway, let's stop.
Hey guys, Sam here from the Adeptus Terra podcast. I'd like to take this opportunity to advertise you guys, actually. If you want to get in contact with us to advertise any gaming groups, Facebook pages, any other podcast, anything to do with 40K and the hobby, then just drop us an email on the Adeptus Terra podcast at gmail.com. That's the Adeptus Terra podcast at gmail.com. We'd be happy to have that conversation with you and hopefully get an advert going out for you. Thanks. See you soon.
So welcome back to our second segment, Pain and Joy of 40K. This month, my pain is basically just being really unorganized with my stuff. I've got a Kanban board, and we won't explain that here, but it kind of just records what you've got to paint, what you've got to build, all that stuff. And there's things on there that have been on there since June last year, and they're still on my hobby desk, and they're there, and I should have just done them and got them done. And it's been frustrating me. Like, I'm painting a couple of orcs, and then the next day I'll paint my Tranifex at the moment. Then the next day I'm painting a building. Then the next day I might even undercoat a Space Wolf unit, which I did the other day, which I forgot to mention. But yeah, just jumping in and out of all the different projects I've got going on, and just kind of not wasting time, because it is still progress, but, you know, that Tranifex could be finished by now. Or, to be honest, those two Orc inventory models, which shouldn't take any time at all, are still half done when they should have been finished this week.
Yeah.
Something I've been trying to do is paint an hour after getting in from work. So kind of the hour hobby time kind of thing that's going around at the moment.
What is it called? Tuttle Time.
Tuttle Time. Yeah. Oh, man. Yeah, we're not going to talk about that. It makes me sad.
Oh, okay.
It should be my pain. but yeah. Just so unorganized with everything, you know. I'm trying the hour a night, and it's really working, and I can see the progress, but it's not on one model. I'm not progressing to the finish. I'm just progressing to the next stage and then moving and painting something else. And although it means I'm still painting and I'm not getting kind of bored and hobby burnout,
yeah,
nothing's getting done, and it's kind of, that's frustrating in itself.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm not sure how I'm going to get over it, but that's what I'm really struggling with at the moment. I don't know. Have you ever had that? Because you're quite buy, build, paint kind of guy at the moment, at least.
When I started my Eldar, when I first started in 40K, I was getting paid weekly. So every week, yeah, I'd run down to the store and buy a new unit. And then I ended up having like 13, 14 squads just not painted. So when I started my Blood Angels, it was religiously, I'm not going to play anything that's not painted. Everything's got to be painted.
That was
and
a nice
based.
Rule. I remember that.
And that worked. And that worked for me. So all of my Blood Angels, everything in my Blood Angel army is painted. Okay, look back between my Imperial Knight and the first Tax Squad I painted. And
there's a difference.
There's a massive difference.
That's natural.
But they are still red and they are still painted.
Yeah.
So, no.
Okay. That's fair enough.
That's only because I don't really eBay hunt, so I pay full price for mine, so it's not a case of I get like one unit a month and then that's painted. But then I wouldn't say there's anything wrong with not having everything painted. No. I just think, why would you bother not painting models?
I think the thing is we both made that commitment to each other, really, didn't we? You started
Sounds
your Blood
like
Angels
getting married a little bit.
Well, that's fine. They can think what they want.
We know the truth.
You've really thrown me off. But we made that commitment between each other about you collecting Blood Angels, me doing Space Wolves, and we weren't going to play anything unpainted.
Yes.
And I've got quite a lot of Space Wolf units painted since the new Codex came out, you know, forever ago, like it felt like last year. My units got jumbled up a bit and things like that, so not so many painted units, but...
Yeah.
I think because I haven't set myself such a strict goal, I'm just like, oh, well, that doesn't matter. That doesn't get finished. And I'll just do this thing because on a whim, I fancy doing that. Because I can get swayed. You know, if I watch a really cool battle report of orcs, I want to paint orcs.
Yeah.
And it just sways me too easily.
The only issue of painting as you go, okay, when you instigate that rule after you've collected, say, 30 units, I've spoken to people who have only been painting like they're what they call their cool units, so like the Terminators, the HQ models, and so I don't think it's as easy to jump to it after you've sort of got all of that. However, I definitely would be maybe looking at just doing one army and just do your Tyranids, or
exactly,
because your orcs are nearly done.
Yeah, well, what I've done kind of towards that vein is I've taken everything Space Wolf and Imperium related off of my Kanban board for now.
Right, okay,
because they're in the back burner. A couple of squads of Tempestor Scions will get bought this year and built, and I've already got the tray for them. I've ordered the last trays I need. They'll be done other than painting.
Yeah.
My Nids and my Orcs are kind of the two units I'm really pushing for at the moment, the two armies, sorry. So yeah, I took them off my Kanban board so I couldn't see all of that mass of stuff. And that seems to be helping. So maybe I should do that. Maybe I should just delete everything that isn't Tyranid. And until that's gone, I won't do anything else.
Yeah.
Although I should make Aught the priority because of the project.
Yeah, you can look at needs for a while.
But yeah. So that's, I've just been struggling with that really, just being a bit unorganized, and you know, I've been getting stuff done, so it's not all bad. It's you know, actually the stuff I'm doing is looking really good. And I'm really proud of it, but it's just nothing's getting finished.
So what's your joy then?
Yeah, move on to happier things. My joy is my friends getting into the background much more, namely the Heresy. So this week, both Bens, Imperial Fist Ben and Ultramarine Ben, I'm calling him right now.
Surely it should be Ultramarine Nid, Imperial Guard.
Yeah, everything under the sun, Tau. Ben. So both our friends called Ben. I've got into kind of reading the Heresy a bit more, and not me personally, only me, but I've been helping them. Like I lent one of the Bens the second book, False Gods.
Yes.
Because he'd read the first one, but doesn't own any others.
Yes.
So I lent him the second book, and Imperial Fist Ben kind of started reading it, got a little bit bored. The kind of first book and a half weren't kind of written in his style, I guess.
Yeah.
So he was struggling with them, and they're great books, but he would just struggle with them. But then the second half of False Gods, I was saying, it's such a good book. Keep reading. And he got to the end and he was like, yeah, you're so right. And now he's halfway through the third book.
Yeah.
And it's just really cool them seeing the background of what our hobby is based on. You know, the 41st millennium exists because of what happened in the Heresy.
Yeah.
And to see friends who, to be honest, someone like Everything Ben.
Yes, Everything Ben.
Who's been in this hobby for a long time, got massive collections. I was shocked that he hasn't read The Heresy.
Yeah.
I mean, Simon said to me that he hasn't really read The Heresy.
No.
And I just thought it was a bit of a given, and I kind of, in some ways, forced myself so I could catch up with everyone else. I felt I was late to the party.
Yeah.
And it's been really nice seeing those guys pick up the book and get excited about the stuff that I know of and being able to talk about it with them and not give away spoilers.
I think it just means that I'm going to have to start reading a lot more because I am so far the most learned Heresy book reader in the group.
Have read the most. I don't know about most learned.
Yeah, I can barely remember what I did this morning.
Exactly.
I read a book. But I'm on Mechanicum, and that's the only reason I haven't started reading any more is because, frankly, I haven't gone and bought the next book.
Yeah.
So I need to carry on reading. I need to start reading more.
Yeah, yeah. But that's been so exciting to see. And I think last episode we spent a bit of time talking about how knowing the background of your army really helps.
Yes, yes.
So that's been cool, kind of seeing that in action. Not that I think we're the only reason they're doing that. They're just ready for it. But I'm glad I've been able to help. And the conversations I've been having with like Imperial Fist Ben, who I see quite a lot, about the Heresy, has just been really exciting and probably the best kind of hobby chats that we've had. So, yeah, I'm really excited about that stuff.
So my pain.
Okay, this is going to be a big one.
Right, so me and Matt actually have had the discussion before.
And I'm glad because it ended in an argument.
Not an argument, just a large disagreement. So my pain is that Forge World are not really bringing themselves to do more 40k related models.
New 40k models.
Okay. Forge World are not doing as many new 40k models anymore. So I remember before Heresy took off, before they were only really just bringing out the different marks of armor, they were bringing out all of the Forge World updates. You got an email every day, was a 40k release, either some fluff bit, a new model, any kind of 40k related type thing. And having something from Forge World was like a special unit within your army.
Yeah, so totally.
And it would form a centerpiece, and you'd paint that model really well, etc. And it became that. And now with the change to 30k, I have found that because it's a massive moneymaker for Forge World and kind of validates their existence to Games Workshop for raking in the money, it basically means that they're going to keep pushing out more and more 30k models. And now I understand.
That's definitely one of the reasons, completely.
And I now understand that you can use 30k models in a 40k game.
Yeah.
But me, being a 40k gamer and don't want to get into 30k at this moment in time, if I go and start buying 30k models, it will then lead to me playing 30k. I just think that at this moment in time, that it's a real shame that the existing 40K models that Forge World are doing are effectively becoming, because they're not bringing out any more, the molds are getting used up. And I'm finding a lot now that the models are being brought out and removed from production. So look at the Inquisitor. I can't remember the name.
Hector Rex.
There we go. But he's been out of stock for, I think, 6 months now. Yeah. And they're not bringing out, they haven't brought out a new one. If before they bring it out, they sort of take it out of stock. And then like next week, it'll be back in. Yeah. Or a new model will be created for him. And that's been out of commission for 6 months. The Krieg guys have gone out a couple of months ago. And I think they are back now.
They're back now.
But a lot of models are starting to go out of their lines. And I think it's a real shame that they are, that for me, Forge World are not servicing my needs by developing more 40K stuff for me and more concentrating towards 30K, which doesn't interest me as a gamer.
Yeah.
I just think, for me, it would be better for them to develop both sides, a 30K and a 40K direction. And that's my pain, because I get this email every day, this amazing Forge World email that shows me all the lovely resin crack that I can buy. But they all look nice, but they're nothing that interests me because I don't play 30K. See, my argument has become more well-rounded last time.
I would say it's much more political, for me, was said quite a lot, which is good.
Yeah.
Which is good. I mean, I completely hear the logic behind your argument.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like there's new models all the time and they are pushing Heresy a lot. I love the Heresy, so I don't mind that. I'm not playing it and I'm not interested in it right now because I just can't afford it, frankly.
No, yeah, absolutely.
Or, you know, time, money, all that stuff. But I don't know, they're re-releasing the Imperial Armor books up to date for the rules.
Yep.
They're still got that feeling of having a special unit for your army.
Yeah.
So I've got the Dima Charon. So I've got that as kind of one of my centerpiece, and I'm going to have the Barbed Herodor as well.
Which will look really awesome.
Which, yeah, will be. And they've been, the Dima Charon is a new model.
Yeah.
Like when they brought out that book, which was last year. So they are doing it, but it is a lot less, and I would definitely admit that. For the Heresy thing, and I understand what you're saying, that, you know, if you buy a 30K model that's got 40K to play rules, you're more likely to get into 30K.
So like your Fire Raptor is a 30K model.
Yes.
And it has new updated rules for 40K, of it being this ancient relic that you can only use one of, which is awesome because it completely validates its existence in the game. For me, though, it's just a... Yeah.
I think, for me, it makes it more special.
Yeah.
So it's a centerpiece, and it is that relic from the Heresy.
Yeah.
So, you know, when you immerse yourself into the background, into the story of your army, to have a relic of the Heresy is like this amazing, special thing.
Yeah.
And so it doesn't make me go, oh, I've got a Fire Raptor, so I might as well play 30K. And I'm sure it does for some people. And I'm sure in some ways Forge World may be very happy with that.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I think just because it's a Heresy unit originally, it still belongs in 40K because a Terminator was originally from the Heresy.
Yeah.
You know, Marine.
The pattern of armors have changed.
A little bit, not 40K, completely though.
But they have still changed.
Well, there was Mark 8 in the Heresy. At the end of the Heresy, there was Mark 8 armor.
Mm.
So it's 10,000 years old, some of it. And I like that, and it's in a continuing story.
Yeah.
So it's not, I don't see it as two separate things.
I suppose the cynical part of me, and we've had this discussion, which then started causing the argument, is that I believe that Forge World have only done that in order to sell and to sell these models to gamers, to use in their 40K. You can also use them in your 40K, make it more, I think it's described as bang for your buck. If you're spending 80 quid on a model that you can transfer between 30 and 40K, then it's more appealing. It's like when you see something for £199.99 or 200 quid.
Yes.
It looks a bit better if it's 99.
Yeah, except that you could argue that for the Space Marines, but again, the Tyranid models cannot be used in any other game.
No, absolutely, yeah.
The Tau, all the Xenos stuff that they've done.
Yeah.
And in some ways, actually, I think they've focused more on the Xenos stuff in the last couple of years than
which
they have
really
the Space
cool.
Marines.
So look at I was amazed by how many Eldar tanks there are on Forge World.
Yeah, quite a lot.
They don't really do many units. I think they've got the Shadow Spectres, but they primarily have got tanks for Eldar.
You know, they're not there to do a whole army.
No,
you know,
no.
You've got all your aspects already in GW Plastic and Failcast. Sorry, I mean Finecast.
Oh yeah, that was a blooper.
but you know, I don't know. We don't see eye to eye on it. I completely understand your side of the argument.
Yeah, yeah.
But I think it's just a bit, I don't know, I don't like being that pessimistic with Forge World. I hope that they're trying to push the background and the narrative of the game more than their sales.
Yep.
And as a company, I'm sure they're pushing their sales.
Yep, yep.
And they're doing a great job at it. But for me, you know, that having the Imperial Armor book that allows you to bring those 30k tanks,
yep,
going back to Space Marines, into 40k is just an extension of the story and the line that is from the Heresy into 40k.
Yeah.
And that's just awesome. And what Forge will do is awesome.
Absolutely.
And I know you're not saying that it isn't.
No. I suppose the overarching for me is I'd like more 40k dedicated,
yeah,
units that I can use.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And to bring back Hector X, because I need him to complete, yeah, my Inquisition force.
I think the thing about that as well, to be fair to them, if you've got a model like that who's been out for a while,
yeah,
you know, probably everyone who wanted him has pretty much got him.
Yep.
To be fair. So you're going to wait a long time before you bother getting them ready, because they're not,
yeah,
selling.
No.
And I understand that as a business as well. So, yeah, I think you shared it so much better now.
Yeah.
Having talked about it before we aired was really good.
Yeah.
And I can't argue with your logic. I just don't necessarily feel as strongly, I guess.
No, absolutely. And I have 30 Forge World models.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's good, because we're talking about that later. Eventually.
So I'm sure if I bought a Fire Raptor, my entire view would change.
Yeah.
So my joy for this month is the fact that I've had so many games, just purely... Or it's,
yeah, it's been really cool.
Eight, nine games. And I also got the opportunity to teach two of my friends from work how
to
play
the
game.
Oh, yeah,
how
did that go?
It went really well. They really enjoyed it.
Good.
They play X-Wing, and X-Wing is so much more regimented.
It's so easy to pick up, though.
It's so easy to pick up, but it's so much more regimented than 40K. Like,
yeah,
I had a game, and it was more like, you have to move that ship there.
Yes.
It doesn't just... It's not inventive. It's just sort of very structured. And that, I think they struggled.
It's very easy to play because of those things.
Oh, absolutely.
That's one of its strengths. But I think when you're into more narrative-based games that's got a really big background, and not saying Star Wars is not a big background.
No.
But the way the game mechanic works,
yeah,
there's so much diversity. Whereas in X-Wing, it's kind of, there's different levels and different abilities. But
yeah,
other than that, not,
yeah,
everything moves kind of the same. And
yeah. But I think they enjoyed it. They really enjoyed it. They were. I used the Blood Angel and Guard Force with the caveat of, if I massively messed it up and overpowered one, then I'd bring the knight in and start fighting with the person who was losing.
That's quite cool.
Just so it was more of a balanced game.
Yeah, and let's have some fun as well.
And I think it was 1 point in it in the end.
Yeah.
For, I think the Guard player lost and the Blood Angel player won.
Oh, great.
Just because. That 1 point, which was awesome, which I couldn't have counted for more of a closer game.
Yeah.
And I think it really helped them. And one of the guys has said that he really wants to start playing a bit more.
Oh, great.
Maybe do a bigger pointed game.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So that's really cool. So yeah, it was just that's my joy, the fact that this month alone, I've probably had more games than the last 6 months of 2014.
Yeah.
So that's really cool.
Awesome. New year, new start.
New year, new start.
Awesome.
That's it then.
Okay, yeah. Well, we shot through those, but I think they were some good conversations. I'm glad we kind of ironed out that Forge World thing, and it was much more, there was no punches being swung this time.
No, there's mics in the way for that.
That's true. They don't want to break the expensive stuff.
No.
But we'll have a quick break and come back with our third segment, 40K Spotlight. And welcome back to our third segment, 40K Spotlight. Our spotlight this episode is on the new Blood Angel Codex.
But this is not a Codex review.
Yeah, we're going to try and stay away from the whole, this unit does this and this unit does that and this is a good list. We're not really interested in that. The rules are awesome and that's how you play. But we want to look at the background of the Blood Angels and what's changed in the Codex. Good, bad, ugly, all that stuff.
Yep.
And whether you can really represent the Blood Angels as they are portrayed in the background on the 40K tabletop. And that's kind of some of the things we're going to be talking about. So yeah, this is the first time we've looked at a codex in our spotlight. So it'd be really good if you really enjoy it. Let us know, and we maybe do a new one in the future.
Yeah.
If you hated it, then we'll try and stay away from it and go back into background only stuff.
Cool.
Just try and sign new. New year, new start.
New year, new start.
So yeah, do you want to start us off as you're our Blood Angel player?
Yes. So I'll take you technically forwards in time, but back in the time of 40K, where the Emperor, the God Emperor, although not a god at the time, created
the Emperor of Mankind.
The Emperor of Mankind created these strange, genetically different people called Primarchs.
Stop speaking weird.
Okay. Thus, the Primarch Sanguinus was born. When they were all cast out, the Primarch Sanguinus ended up on the... he was cast out to the nuclear-blasted moon of Baal Secundus. While he was thrown through the warp, not protected by Gellerfields, he... somehow grew wings, because that's what happens to you when you're in the warp for a long period of time and you crash land on a nuclear irradiated planet, moon of Baal Secundus. He was found by a group of mutants, I suppose is the fairest way of saying it. Ugly things, couple of eyes, couple of toes, couple of faces, type of people. And they originally wanted to kill him. However, they took it upon themselves to not kill him and to keep him alive.
Raise him, I guess.
Raise him as one of their own, which was cool.
Yeah. So this is kind of the background of, obviously, the Legion itself, or chapter as we now know it in 40K.
Yep.
So you've got to start with the Primarch, haven't you, really?
Yeah. So the skipping forward in time, when Sanguinius... had
Sparkly Ferryman.
Sparkly Ferryman. When he grew up and the Emperor came back, he instantly knew he was the Emperor of Mankind, and he threw himself on his feet.
Yep.
At his feet, there we go. And basically pronounced he was going to look after him for the rest of his life. And thus, the Primarch of the Blood Angel was returned to the rightful place ahead of the Red Army. Not in the football Red Army, the Red Army of Blood Angels, but that's cool. So during the Great Crusade, the Blood Angels were known as being a fantastic assault and shock troops. They were I think it's described as the tip of the arrow being fired at the enemy. They were always the ones in the front. They were always the assault troop. They had formed a rivalry with the World Eaters Legion because they were orientated the same way. They were very assault based armies. So they were rivals with them of being the first into battle.
Okay, interesting.
So during the Horus Heresy itself, the Blood Angels were one of the few legions who actually fought alongside the Emperor during the Battle for Terror.
This is what they're probably best known for in the Heresy, really, isn't
yep.
it? You know, this big epic battle that comes.
Which I'm quite disappointed hasn't been covered yet in the Horus Heresy books.
It's like the last thing.
I know, but I want to read more about Blood Angels. When Horus lowered the shields on his battle barge and the Emperor teleported upon the ship, Sanguinus was with him at that time, which then led to the chink in the armor of Horus, which would then lead to...
That's one of the stories.
Okay, that's the version I choose to believe.
Yeah.
The Primarch became separated from the Emperor and found Horus alone. at that time, the Warmaster was trying to sway Sanguinus because he knew that he would struggle to beat him in hand-to-hand combat.
Yeah, Sanguinus was definitely one of the only Primarchs Horus really feared. There was two or three that he kind of shares in various books throughout the Heresy, and kind of some of the authors have hinted towards it at Black Library events and things. And Sanguinus is up there. Sanguinus was someone who Horus feared because he knew about his loyalty to the Emperor and knew how good a opponent he would be in a one-to-one death match, which is where we find them.
Which is where we find him now. So the Warmaster tried one last time to swing Sanguinius to the side of Chaos, but rightfully Sanguinius attacked Horus instead and basically engaged in a very dramatic, slow-motion, hair-flicking fight.
Definitely hair-flicking.
Definitely hair-flicking, in which the demonically strengthened Horus ended up slaying Sanguinius, as the Primarch actually inevitably knew that he would be slain by Horus at this time.
Didn't he not have like some psychic vision of it happening or something?
Yeah, like he
knew
his time of death.
Some kind of imprint that it was going to happen at that time, and not necessarily at Horace's hand, but I don't know, there was some kind of thing in the background. I remember reading that.
So he was slain, but the idea behind Sanguinius going after Horace was to buy more time for the Emperor to find them. And because he knew that the Emperor would be able to effectively beat his son back into submission. He had foreseen his death, like Matt just said, and yet he still wanted to fight. Horace because he knew that his dying would allow the Emperor to go forth and kill.
Because I mean, there's the bit in the story where, this is major spoilers for the Heresy. So I'm sure if you don't know what happens at the end of the Heresy, I don't know what you've been doing in 40K, but
just skip ahead 5 seconds.
The Emperor doesn't want to kill Horace still, he's his son.
Yeah.
And Sanguinius, I think in some ways kind of knew, actually, if we have a battle and I hold him up and then the Emperor can see us fighting, he may snap out of it and do what needs to be done. And it's, I don't know, there's this epicness in this story of Sanguinius being the hero that's like, I'm outnumbered 100-1, I'm definitely dead, but I'm going out swinging.
Yeah.
And, not letting that scare him or make him run away, but I'm going to stand up to this even though I have no chance. And, I really admire him for that.
Yeah.
However much I take the mickey out of his golden armour and his L'Oreal hair.
You're just jealous that your hair's greasy. Or your Primarch hair's greasy.
Whatever.
So, because of he had this foreseen his death, it was held amongst the other Blood Angels. It was very deep and mysterious that he knew this. Actually, when Sanguinius died, it was it left a very strong psychic imprint on the entire legion at that moment.
Yeah,
since they they all shared the DNA with Sanguinius, so they all were linked psychically, bodily, etc. However, this was a willing sacrifice that was made in order to buy the Emperor more time to give him a weakness in Horus's armor, which was key to bringing Horus down and to actually ending the Heresy.
Yeah.
So towards the end of the Heresy, the Blood Angels would, because of this tragic and very violent end,
backlash.
Yeah, of Sanguinius, they began to suffer from the Black Rage to an extent unforeseen.
Dying, it was in there before, wasn't it?
They had the Red Thirst there before, which basically was the slight losing of control while fighting, the bloodlust.
There's a really interesting comment that Sanguinius makes in one of the books, and again, spoilers, I'm sorry, but it's kind of just too cool to share, where he kind of lets on to one of his brother Primarchs that there's this fault with the Legion in the Red Thirst, and he says, have you not spoken to the Emperor? Surely he can help. And Sanguinius says, I don't want to lose my legion like another has been destroyed. And it kind of linking into those forgotten legions that are there in the background.
Yeah.
The two legions that are destroyed and not ever spoken about.
Yeah.
Which is interesting. So kind of Sanguinius and the Blood Angels kind of kept the Red Thirst hidden to everyone else. But at this point, it seems to be going out of control with no Primarch to help.
Which then descends them into the Black Rage. The Black Rage is it's basically the dying memories of the Primarch being bombarded on every psyche of the Blood Angels, driving them into the fits of violent rage, basically lust to kill anything and everything in their path. And it fell to the Sanguinary priests, who were effectively the apothecaries of the chapter, in order to control the suffering of the Black Rage between all the Blood Angels. So now, in present-day Blood Angels, they have rites, rituals, drinking from the blood from the cup in order to suppress the Black Rage as much as possible.
Yeah.
And yet, in the countless generations since the Heresy, the genetic defect in the Blood Angels' gene seed has actually increased, and the floor is actually getting worse, so more and more Blood Angels are falling to the Black Rage.
Yeah. I mean, just looking at the notes, it kind of talks about them having Sanguinius memories and thinking of kind of fighting Horus themselves, and they get this, fit of fury, like we said, and unearthly power. They get stronger.
Yeah.
A Space Marine getting stronger is pretty scary, and you kind of realize why Death Company now, who are the guys who suffer from this, why they're so good in the game.
Yeah, why and they have two attacks, why they have the...
Because they're going mental and suddenly hulked out in their armor.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's interesting that it's getting worse. Maybe that's because the memories are maybe more and more vague.
It would make sense in terms of the fluff to the rules ratio, because now instead of you rolling on the dice if they've got red first, everyone gets red first. So actually, progressionally wise,
yeah, that's
everyone
interesting.
Has actually now started getting worse.
That's an interesting change, yeah.
But that's later on. So the Black Rage, more in a little bit more detail. When a Space Marine, a Blood Angel, is overcome by the Black Rage, he effectively loses it, goes crazy. He enters into a world of anger, hatred, fury, and nothing else.
Hulks out.
He turns into the Hulk. And with Sanguinius's memory haunting them of his death, the Blood Angel is touched with a small portion of his unearthly power, boosting the strength and vitality to superhuman levels.
Yeah.
So more superhuman than already a superhuman human.
Yeah.
So it just gets
Hulkier. Beastly, yeah.
So rather than the Blood Angels who have succumbed to the Black Rage, rather than them facing a slow and painful death, the Blood Angels will form. They will form the people who have fallen to the rage into squads, units, known as Death Company.
Yeah.
They paint the armor black. They dab them with red crosses, which signify Sanguinius' wounds. Just so, as well, so everyone knows, stay away from these guys. They're going to kill you.
Danger.
Yeah. They're led by the chapter's chaplains.
Which used to be called Grave Wardens, if I'm correct.
Yes.
Because of the Red Thirst and everything that was going on in the Heresy.
So they're led by chaplains, mainly because it's like, come on, follow the stick. Come on, guys, follow the stick with the wings on top.
Well, I think it's probably because although they've kind of lost it, they're not completely gone.
No.
They're not a danger to their brother in the sense that, like, Khan is to World Eaters.
No.
You know, he'll just happily kill his comrade next to him. Whereas the Death Company clearly kind of see friend and foe. And I guess the epitome of who to follow is a chaplain.
Well, the chaplains have the ability to communicate anyway to them directly, right, where, say, normal Marines may not.
Yeah, well, even a captain or something. I mean, the chaplains, since the Heresy, were there to help with spotting falls to chaos and keeping people on the straight and true.
Yeah.
So, you know, the Blood Angels have a difficult job. Their chaplains have a difficult job of controlling the Black Rage guys, but if there was anyone in the chapter to do it, it would be the chaplains.
I think it's quite key to,
and they're painted black too.
It makes sense. I think it's quite key to say that the Black Rage forces are normally on the ground first, being thrown towards the enemy, because they have that, they know they're going to die anyway, and they normally put them into the Tower of the Lost. Where they stay, so they're like the hotel.
Yeah.
And they're normally put there anyway. So actually throw them at the enemy to have a glorious death in battle is much better than...
Well, for a Space Marine, that's all they know, isn't it?
Exactly.
There's only war.
So even better, you can get these in Terminator, in Dreadnought armor as well.
That's pretty cool.
So Death Company Dreadnoughts are probably, fluff-wise, one of my favorite Blood Angel units.
They are very cool.
Just because of this one little extract in the old Codex, which said, in order to capture Death Company Dreadnought again, you basically have to have a tech priest sneak up behind one and turn it off before it gets killed.
Yeah, it's awesome. Like, EMP, run!
Yes, the Death Company Dreadnoughts are so crazy that they will just happily kill and attack anyone and everyone. So it takes is it Adept? Is that what they call them?
Adeptus Mechanicus.
The, you know, the trainee ones.
Oh, I can't. An adept.
Or
novitae, whatever. Lots of different.
Basically, the main tech priest is going, go on, turn off the off switch on the back. and just shove a servitor towards the Dreadnought. And it takes an EMP to
knock
stop
them
these
out.
Things. And then they get deactivated and turn it off and then basically put back in storage until they're required again.
That's pretty awesome.
So that's probably the only reason that I like them as they are now. So the Rage first. Sorry, just to going on the other side of the... They have the two defects, Black Rage and the Red First.
Yeah.
And the Red First is a flaw in the gene seed of the Blood Angels and any successor chapter that causes warriors to suffer an unusual bloodlust, instilling them with the thirst for blood of their enemies. So it's a little bit like going...
Kind of vampiric.
It's kind of like a... You lose it a little bit during battle, which makes you a little bit more inclined to kill more harder.
Yeah, You can see how the Red Thirst leads to the Black Rage.
Oh, yeah, 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 yeah. It's like a slight anger. Like, everyone gets... it when you're in an argument,
yeah,
you get, like, the adrenaline. Yeah, yeah. Goes, yeah, carry on going. This is just that, yeah. But...
Well, I guess in the same way, in a, you know, it sounds really weird and it does sound kind of vampire-like, but then there's some people that, you know, the sight of their own blood sends them a bit mental. You know, like, there'll be certain fighters, whether they're boxers or, you know, martial artists... who will, you know, see their own blood, whether they're bleeding from the mouth or something, and that'll just spur them on even more. And it kind of almost gives them that bloodlust, that sense of adrenaline that they don't get any other way.
Yeah.
This is like it just magnified, I guess.
Yeah.
Just trying to see it logically rather than just, that's weird.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
but yeah. Yeah, yeah. No, it's interesting, the whole background of the Blood Angels and how they kind of have this flaw. Being a Space Wolf player, there's a... different flaw in their gene seed, so it's kind of interesting to see the different one. And then the Black Rage kind of really kicking off, and we mean really kicking off after Sanguinius's death and them being so tied to him, and as it's been longer and longer from his death, they're getting worse.
Yeah.
And I don't know, maybe the next codex, nearly everything is Death Company, and there's a, you know, it's harder to get more units in,
yeah,
that aren't. I
that'd
don't know
cool.
it
that'd
could
be cool.
interesting.
So really, what's changed, and is it better or not?
Yeah, we should move on, shouldn't we?
So just a few, I suppose, a little bits at first. The thing that's changed now is Death Company and Sanguinary Guard cannot count combat squad like other,
yeah,
other units.
Could they
can.
The last time?
So Sanguinary Guard used to be a 5-man max,
yeah,
and now it's gone up to 10-man.
Yeah, yeah.
So
I see. So you could... technically combat squad them if they had the rule, because
yeah,
you can make them bigger now.
Yeah, so
okay,
they haven't got it, which is slightly weird, because they're meant to be the finest warriors in the Blood Angel Codex.
I guess that's probably why, though, because I read that and I thought, do you know what, they're built for a specific task and it's normally guard the important guy.
Yeah, yeah.
To be honest, that's Sanguinary Guard. So... why would you split them in half?
No. I understand.
So, although you can bring 10 of them, I think it's more of the... if you're playing a massive game, bring 10 of them.
Yeah.
If you're not, you're going to bring a smaller squad.
Yeah.
I mean, can they go lower than 5?
No.
So that would have been cool if you could have like 2, 3 and upwards.
Yeah. Because
then you could even have just 2 guarding a captain or something. That would have been really, really cool.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't see that as a...
and
as a reason why not.
Like, and Death Company can't also either. But that, I suppose that's because they're slightly crazy.
They're kept together.
Let's
face it.
It's just, let's push the sheep that way till they start attacking people.
I don't think I'd call them sheep.
Well, have you ever seen the film Black Sheep?
True, yeah. They are a load of black sheep. Yeah.
There we go. So, Furious Charge. Everyone's got it in the Codex.
Oh, so scary. Having played it, it's so scary.
Furious Charge, I believe, and... I've got my codex in my bag, my old codex in my bag, that Furious Charge used to be done on a roll of a 1, you'd gain Red Thirst, which
yes,
would give you
Furious Charge. Yeah.
Now...
everything has Red Thirst.
Now everything has Red Thirst.
So as they're getting worse, like we said.
Yeah.
That's cool. I'm glad they've kind of, you know, noted that in the fluff and in the background and then applied it to the rule set.
Which is cool.
That's really cool. And that's kind of moving towards our last point that we'll get to in a while.
So the... they get the, obviously, Furious Charge gives them the standard rules, so they get the extra strength from the charge. Obviously, that makes quite a big difference.
Don't they have another rule that makes them, I think it's the detachment, that gives them +1 initiative on the charge? I'm sure there is. Yeah, go and check. Because I'm pretty sure that we worked out that you can basically get your old 5th Ed Furious Charge on your assault squads, where you're initiative 5, strength 5 on the charge. And it's just disgusting. Sam's going to look that up. While he's chatting, I'm going to run through the Warlord traits with you guys. Again, we're not really reviewing these, but we're just sharing the information out there. You know, there's obviously 6 of them like normal, and you roll on them. I think if you take the detachment, you get to re-roll that option. Obviously, the named characters come with their set ones. But yeah, we have like Rampage, +1 Initiative, Weapon Master Crafted... gain Adamantium Will, Descent of Angels, which is something that's definitely changed, and I'll wait for Sam and we'll go back to that. Or that your units can become fearless, which is pretty cool. So yeah, kind of cool for Warlord traits.
They're very personal. So a lot of these are more personal based rather than, well,
yeah,
all of them
kind
more
of
personal based.
Built towards the hero.
Yeah, rather than the army wide effect. So the only one really that's army wide is the Imperium, any armies of the Imperium.
Oh yes, I fearless.
Gain
so,
fearless
yeah,
within 12 inches. So that's pretty. It's pretty good.
Stick him in the middle of a Astra Militarum force, and that could be quite nasty.
Yep, and everything else is kind of a personal affect your squad that you're with, maybe, or if you're on your own.
Yeah.
So what Matt was referring to is they have. Let's have a look. The Baal Strike Force, they gain the Red Thirst rule. It's in the turn in which a model with this formation charges into combat, the model adds one to its initiative characteristic until the end of the assault phase. The model has made a disorder charge that turn and receives no benefit from the Red Thirst.
Yeah.
So you get the one plus initiative and the characteristic.
Yeah, yeah, so on a charge, if you're taking a unit from that detachment, which you're going to, let's face it, if you're playing Blood Angels, you're going to use their force organization chart rather than the standard one. All your units are getting plus one strength, plus one initiative on the turn they charge.
Which is always good.
It's terrifying. That game we played, I'm playing Space Wolves, which are, you know, normally quite good in close combat, and they still are, I think. We're getting outclassed by your Blood Angels, and that was a new thing. And I'm not saying that's a bad thing, that's kind of cool, but it was definitely a new thing I experienced. I now want to sit back a bit more and maybe take down your numbers before I think about getting into charges. So, yeah, it's very interesting. I like that change.
Whereas by Furious Charge, which you get anyway, is the 1 plus your strength, isn't it?
Yeah.
So you get 1 plus strength and initiative, which
yes.
is awesome.
Yeah, it's the old Furious Charge in 5th Ed.
Which is cool.
Which is what you used to kick face with your old Blood Angel list.
She used to love. So now, as you may or may not remember from the old Codex, the Baal Predators, Rhinos, every vehicle other than Land Raiders
yeah.
used to be a fast vehicle
yes.
rather than just a normal tank. That has now gone. However, the majority of vehicles bar Land Raiders.
Still Land Raiders.
Can buy overcharged engines, which is effectively, you give them the fast characteristic, but you pay for it.
Yeah.
Which, for me, is a why wouldn't you pay for it? Because
especially on something like a Vindicator, it basically gives you an extra, you know, 6-inch, 12-inch shot, basically.
Yeah, which, again,
why would you put in a Whirlwind?
Why wouldn't you?
Because you're never going to move the thing.
You might want to. You have the ability to move it if you want to.
Do you know what, actually, that article you forwarded to me said always give it to a Rhino, because that Rhino that's still alive on the last turn can get so far further across the board and get on an objective
yeah.
with objective secured if they've got a troop choice in them.
Yep.
And win you the game. So yeah, it was very interesting.
Very, very interesting. Another change which I really like is Magna Grapples. In the old Codex, it used to be the Dreadnought could pull tanks towards you slightly.
Yeah, yeah, it had a weird rule, didn't
which
it?
Which was slightly weird.
It was kind of cool, but a bit weird.
Bit very situational.
Didn't really clunky mechanic.
Wasn't worth the like 20 points it cost or however many. But now they grant the Dreadnought move through cover all
which is
the time.
Awesome.
Fleet. When charging against vehicles.
Yeah, slightly being pulled towards the vehicle is pretty cool.
And that's it. But
yeah.
it basically makes the Dreadnought that little bit more deadly in close combat, which is obviously what you want.
Yeah, especially going in against vehicles. So, you know, I guess the thing that might have changed here, and again, we're not trying to review units too much, but a Death Company Dreadnought was always going into that boys squad, you know, or infantry squad or even 10 tactical marines because of all the re-rolls you were getting on your claws.
Which you don't get anymore.
Whereas you don't get that anymore. So actually, putting them into vehicles with that many attacks with re-roll to wound, which would be re-roll armor pens,
yep,
is really interesting. So maybe they've got a new role.
Yeah.
So maybe you use those claws as tin openers rather than slicing men apart.
Yeah, definitely worth a try.
New tactic.
So I suppose next we move on to the Relics of Baal. These are the
obviously these are all new, aren't they? Because
we've never had any of these. These are in every Codex now, which they are effectively a special piece of war gear, only available to your Codex.
Yeah.
Very quickly, I'll just run through them. You get Viritas Vitae, which gives an extra roll on the strategic table.
That's awesome. I can take science similar for orcs. It's called the thinking cap. And the the background of it is a commissar's hat. And he basically wears it and thinks hard and he gets an extra warlord table. On that table are some amazing rules, like you can outflank up to 3 units and things like that. You can really change your deployment and the way you're going to attack the enemy with that unit. And yeah, for Blood Angels, I could imagine that being really good because you can't assault out of outflank, but you can get those really punchy units up there quicker with an outflank
so
than
Terminators.
Walking.
Yeah.
Terminators, a large blob of Death Company that aren't in a vehicle to keep the cost down. That could work really well. Can you imagine how big can you have a squad of Death Company now?
15 now. They've gone down from
15, 30. Okay. But still, 15 Marines outflanking on your own table edge.
Give them more Thunder Hammers. Give them more Power Swords. Give them more Jump Packs.
I'd just leave them base and just walk on 6 inches and go, deal with me.
Yeah, yeah.
And even if they do deal with most of them, that's a very big distraction. But anyway, that's more tactics. We're not doing that.
Galleon Staff, which is apparently like the Libra Demonica in the Grey Knight Codex. It allows you to reroll ones when making a psychic test. Ooh. Really, really good.
Interesting.
However, if you roll a one again, you cause an automatic wound.
The likelihood of rolling 2 ones in a row, you know, it'll happen to you once in a blue moon, but
yeah,
whatever.
Valor's Edge.
Oh, this thing's cool.
Is 5 ball points and a power sword, and quite frankly, well worth it. It's better than a power fist in many situations, and it allows you to strike at your initiative and give you the additional attack if paired with a pistol.
Yeah.
Mephiston can't have this, however.
It's an AP2 power sword, basically.
AP2 power sword, basically, yeah.
Which is frankly awesome, because then suddenly the initiative 4 attacks, or you know, if it's on a captain, maybe initiative 5, you go in before those Terminators, even with lightning claws, who you're then breaking through their armor, and suddenly they've got a guardsman save of 5+.
Good.
You know, it's really handy having an AP2 sword, and for 5 points, it's pretty much a steal. I think the only thing that might stop you is if you can only take 1 relic an army.
Yes.
Is that the rules, or is it 1 relic on a dude? I can't remember. I know you can only take 1 of that type of relic.
No, only 1. Oh, yeah, yeah. There's only 1 per artifact. It just says.
But you could technically have 6 HQs with all 1 of each of them.
Only 1 of each of the following artifacts may be chosen per army. There is only 1 of each of these items in the galaxy. So, no, you can only take 1.
In your whole army?
In your whole army.
Okay, see, for me, I really like that Veritas Vitae. Just for the extra strategic table and change the way I might play and really throw off the enemy.
Well, you can also take the Angel's Wing, which is you can give it to a model and that jump, they gain the jump unit type.
Yeah, that's an interesting one. It's a bit clunky. I don't know. It's going to need to be FAQ'd, I think.
Yeah.
Because they don't have a jump pack,
no.
Do they?
No. They have the jump type. A unit containing a model of the unit's wing may reroll the scatter die to determine the final position when arriving by deep strike, and may also reroll any rolls on the deep strike mishap table. Furthermore, any models that target this unit result with the intercept special rule can only make snapshots. It doesn't mean they get jump, as in they can jump.
Yeah. So once they've deep striked, once they've deep struck, they
you
then
forget,
are moving 6 inches.
I've now lost my ability to.
Do a lot of deep strike.
Do deep strike and only scatter 1 dice.
Yeah, that's something that changed in the Descent of Angels.
Yep. The thing is with Blood Angels, a lot of stuff has changed to re-centralize it, but they still kept a lot of the interesting cool stuff, or just toned it down a bit.
Yeah. Well, I think every army's gone through that, really. I think it's the 7th Ed way at the moment, I think. It's all kind of, do you know what, let's deduct the points, let's make this guy a little bit less beasty, but still pretty good. Let's not give the whole army this rule, but let's give them this rule.
Yeah.
And I like how they've kind of turned Blood Angels from the jump pack Marines, which is all you saw on the table, to the assault Marines.
Yeah, yeah.
And not just assault as in jump pack Marines, but even tactical squads are scary now with the Furious Charge and the +1 initiative.
Yeah.
And if they get the quickening on them, which we will get to the psychic cards eventually,
yes.
Could be disgusting the amount of attacks even a tactical squad member throws out.
Yep.
It's so scary.
So another one of the relics of Baal is the Crown Angelic. The model with the Crown Angelic has the fear special rule. In addition, the enemy suffers a negative two penalty to the leadership when taking fear tests caused by this item. Pretty
good against anything that's not a marine.
Yeah, good against a guardsman. Blob's got a 70.
Yeah, that'd be funny.
Making them all run away, that's cool. And the Fury of Baal, which is a range 12, strength 7, AP 2, pistol, which is mastercrafted. It could be cool.
Yeah, it's basically a plasma pistol without gets hot and a reroll to hit.
Yeah.
So you can't really argue with that. Again, if you can only take one, for me, it's either that AP 2 power sword or the... that allows you to take the extra warlord trait.
Cool.
For me. But yeah.
Cool. So I suppose the next thing to move on to is the psychic powers.
Yeah, let's talk about psychic powers. I guess I'll start with the quickening because it just scares me so much.
And you know about it?
And you can make me... Yeah, I do kind of know about it, I think. Basically, it's a blessing that you can give, and I believe it's anyone within 12 inches?
Yep, 12 inches.
Yeah, awesome. And you cast it on one of your units, and they gain... Is it D3 or is it 3?
Whilst power's in effect, the target has the fleet special rule and D3 initiative, and attacks.
So it could, initiative and attacks goes up by D3. Now, if you think about that, a tactical squad member with one attack, just got a bolter, no combat weapon, fine. You know, you roll a 3 on that after you get the quickening on that squad. Then that's base 4. Then you charge 5. So you've got a tactical marine hitting on initiative 8 with the plus 1 initiative because you're taking the Baal Strike Force.
Yeah.
So initiative 8 with 5 attacks at strength 4 AP dash each.
Yep.
If that's a, let's say, 10-man squad, that is 50 dice. That's so scary. Well, probably a little bit more if you've got a sergeant in there with a combat weapon and maybe a character.
Yeah.
That's so scary. And it just, it makes mincemeat even of other Marines.
Yeah.
So scary. Like, yeah, I just can't quite comprehend how powerful that power is.
Good though.
And you could roll a 1. You know, you can roll the 1 or a 2.
But even 1 plus initiative and strength. Initiative
yeah.
And...
Yeah. Well, especially if you've got Furious Charge anyway. So you're going to go to base 5. From the plus 1 from quickening, and then Furious Charge. So you're at strength 6. So you're suddenly wounding on 2s. That's the thing. You're going to be hitting Marines on 4s and wounding on 2s, even on a roll of a 1 or a 2 on a D3.
Mm.
Like, it's scarily powerful. And it's your Primaris, so you don't even have to get lucky.
Nope.
You're always going to get it. And it's so scary.
Yep.
And I think it's awesome, and it really, again... makes them that assault marine army,
yep.
Which I really love about the Blood Angels, especially in this edition. But yeah, just scared the hell out of me playing with my Space Wolves.
Yeah. The next one is Fear of the Darkness. This is a malediction that targets a single enemy unit within 12 inches. The target must immediately take a morale check with a negative 2 modifier.
Yeah.
Mess up a couple of squads, mainly against Imperial Guard, I suppose.
Yeah, Guard, Orcs, Tau. Anything that doesn't have and they know no fear.
Yes.
Or Fearless.
Yeah.
Which is a lot, to be honest. That's the thing. Anything that's kind of modify leadership, effects by fear, it's situational. Like, it's not bad, but it's situational.
Absolutely. Mine, a lot of these are. Unleash Rage. This is a blessing that targets a single friendly unit within 18 inches. Whilst the power is in effect, the target has the Rage special rule. If the target already has the rage special rule, they instead have a 1+ attack whilst using this power.
Yeah, pretty cool. I'm trying not to review it because we're not doing a codex review.
No.
I mean, we need to go through them like this because they're brand new.
Yeah.
And they are something that's changed because they weren't there before.
Nope. the Shield of Sanguinius. Whilst blessing his attack, the target, the Psyker, it's best that targets the Psyker whilst the power's in effect. All models in the Psyker's unit have the 5+ invul save.
That's very cool, because that used to be, before they took it away, of course,
the Shield.
Wasn't it a 5+ cover save?
5+ cover save.
In a 6-inch bubble.
6-inch bubble.
Whereas now it's the unit has a 5+ invul save.
Yep, so that's changed.
That's mad. Again, that on a tactical squad. Imagine getting that and the quickening on that tactical squad. And that's the thing, if you've got someone like Mephiston in that tactical squad, because he can now join one, which has changed.
So much has changed.
Man, you know, he's a level 3 Psyker. there's so many things going up in the air there, and you could just, you could really abuse it, yeah, which would lose you friends, but you can really use it to your advantage, and it really does put fear into your enemies. Really does.
So Blood Boil is a focus witch firepower, which range of 18. The target must take two toughness tests. For each test that is failed, the target loses a single wound with no saves of any kind allowed. If the target is slain, center the large blast marker over the target before removing him as casualties. All other models under marker suffered strength 4, AP 5, hit with the ignore cover special rule.
This is the guy that goes pop.
Goes pop and then pops over everyone else.
Yeah, nice. Boiling blood all over your face.
Boiling blood. That's cool. The Blood Lance. This was my especially favourite psychic power in the last edition. It used to, you rolled 4 dice and that was how far it goes. Now it only moves 12 inches.
Yeah.
But it's still a strength 8, AP 1, assault 1, lance. It's a beam for anyone else.
12 is about average on 4 dice anyway, I think. Well, it's in that average range.
Not when I roll 24.
Well, yeah, but that's quite difficult.
Done it.
Yeah, but it doesn't happen all the time.
And the Wings of Sangrinius. This is cool. However, I think for our first game, we actually played it wrong to start with, didn't we?
Yes. Yeah.
So this is where the target, the Blessing targets a single friendly infantry unit within 12 inches.
Yeah, and we did it to a Death Company Dreadnought.
Yeah, the target immediately makes a move up to 12 inches. This move cannot end on top of another unit or impassable terrain, but ignores intervening units, terrain, etc. Any model that starts and ends its turn in difficult terrain must take a dangerous terrain test. The target unit cannot charge in the same turn the power is used, and all models in that unit count as having moved in the movement phase for the purpose of shooting weapons in the shooting phase.
Yeah, yeah. So basically, you can jump infantry units 12-inch forward, and then if they're affected by how far they move and how many guns they can shoot, etc., then they can shoot that many.
Yeah.
I mean, it doesn't really need all that extra bit of there. It's just you can move 12, you can do everything other than assault.
Yep.
Yeah. So, yeah, kind of cool.
Cool. Good.
Yeah. Shall we talk about some units, maybe? Or maybe the highlight, just two or three units that have changed and we're kind of...
Yep.
Think that's either, well... good, bad, or not that great.
Good, bad, or not that great. So, what's changed? A lot of units have changed. I now only have 2 troop choices. I only have scouts and attack squads. Yeah. Everything else, so assault squads, vanguard vet squads,
Death Company
Dreadnoughts.
Yeah, that's true.
Has all moved into the elite section.
Wow. Which, well, not all of it.
Not all of it. The majority of it has moved into the elite section.
Yeah.
Or fast attack. So it's been spread out evenly between them two. Which is cool. It makes complete sense. However, I do miss my assault squad troop choices. It just means I'm going to take a lot less of them, I suppose.
Yeah, I think where you've got the movement of Baal Preds to heavy,
yep,
now that kind of takes that pressure off for someone like you who plays a lot of Baal Preds.
Yeah.
You know, you can now still take 2, maybe 3 of those assault squads if that's really what you want to go for that game. And then you're probably playing the same amount.
Yeah, yeah.
So, and again, they're trying to move away, and I can see why they've done it. You know, they're moving away from the whole Death Company are everywhere.
Yep.
You know, because the Black Rage is the worst part of the genetic flaw.
Yep.
Everyone may be getting worse, but that doesn't mean everyone's a Death Company just yet.
So theoretically, I used to be able to take, what, 30, 60, 90, 180 Death Company?
Yeah, 6 troop choices of 30.
Yeah.
Yeah. And now they've whittled that down and put them in the elite slot, which has kind of knocked you back a bit, which I think's good. Again, I think it represents a more likely force you'd see.
Absolutely.
Tactical squads and scouts are the troops. They are the Blood Angels, although they fight in their certain way and they're very get in your face and punch stuff and have lots of librarians and all the kind of nice personality bits, they are still a Codex chapter.
Yeah.
I find it interesting that at the top of your codex it says Adeptus Astartes, Blood Angels.
Yeah.
On the Space Wolves, it doesn't say Adeptus Astartes. I don't know why.
Well, that's because it says Hereticus.
No.
Codeticus.
No, it just says Space Wolves. And the Space Wolves don't fight the way the codex does.
No.
But Blood Angels do, and this feels like a codex chapter. But just with tweaks and personality in areas. And I like that about it. But yeah, that's something that's changed.
So I suppose as well, Library and Dreadnoughts have moved us to be HQs.
Yeah.
Which is cool. Sanguinary Priest has also moved to HQs.
Which I'm so happy about.
Which makes complete sense, because it stops you spamming six. You could, well, no, because it's three in each.
Well,
so three,
technically,
six,
you could bring a whole army of them with Unbound. But
Yeah.
But yeah, it does make you not want as much to take, you know, six Sanguinary Priests or nine or something.
Do you know what? Not having them, not bringing them in with every assault squad has actually taught me that assault squads can stand up on their own. They have the ability to survive, and they don't need that extra charge dice. They don't need that extra feel no pain hit. So they have taught me that they do survive more.
I reckon you probably get more in your army now because you're taking less characters, which always have a higher price because they give you good stuff.
Yeah.
But my philosophy of playing is cheap is normally better.
Yeah.
Yeah, not always, but normally. So having cheaper assault squads means you can have probably more assault squads.
Yeah. I think the best thing so far at the moment in the codex that I've seen is Mephiston has dropped in points and is now an independent character. So
he
can join squads.
That's really cool.
Which he never used to be able to do.
And he's still a beast.
He's still a beast. He has dropped in some stats.
But that's good because he was ridiculous.
Some say primate level. Some say he still needs an invul save. what else, really? So much has changed.
Yeah, I mean, there's so much. I mean, the points have dropped across the board, which I found with my Space Wars.
Well, I've gone from 8,000 points down to like 6,900.
Yeah, and I have a very similar kind of price range.
Yeah.
You know, it feels like units are being recognised for what they are. Librarian Dreadnoughts are going to be revered and looked up to in the Blood Angels.
Well, I didn't know, actually. I was looking through a couple of the Blood Angel history books, and there was an attack from an orc, three orc, what do they call their ships? Hulks.
Anything, Hulks. Yeah.
Hulks that were fired at Baal Secundus. The world
Sanguinius was found on. Yeah,
Sanguinius was found on. And that's where the Blood Angel what's it called?
Fortresses,
yeah. There we go, I'll get there eventually. The Blood Angel Fortress is, and it was left to a Furious, a Librarian Dreadnought, and 47 other Dreadnoughts to defend the world against the thousands upon thousands of orcs.
Yeah.
And they held out until a strike force arrived. And it says that they mopped up the remains of the blood. so it was really cool. I never knew that existed. So now I have a reason to buy 47 Furious Dreadnoughts. Just to play that one mission.
Yeah, me and Simon will bring the Orc boys.
Yeah.
You bring the Dreadnoughts.
We'll see how long it lasts. but it was cool because I know you always talk about your Space Wolves when they have Battle of the Fang.
Oh, yeah.
Where the Dreadnoughts defend the...
A lot of Dreadnoughts with one. There's a company there out of the 12 that exist, so not that many Space Marines. And they basically just wake a ton of Dreadnoughts and go, help us.
Yeah.
And they're like, all right, let's do it.
So exactly, it's like very similar type of thing. So that was quite cool. It'd be interesting to see if they do a book of that in the future.
Yeah.
So I suppose, can I really represent the Blood Angels and their philosophy and characters on the battlefield now?
Yeah, I mean, this question is really what interests us, isn't it? You know, we're narrative gamers. We're trying to kind of tell a story with our forces, you with your Blood Angels, me with my Space Wolves, and our other armies.
Yeah.
And I guess last episode, like I said, we spoke a lot about knowing the background of your army and using that to write lists. And I mean, I'll jump right in and say, from what I can tell as an outsider of not playing Blood Angels, it feels like it's the closest to being able to represent the fluff of Blood Angels than it ever has been.
Yeah. The simple answer to that question is, that can I really represent the Blood Angels philosophy and character on the battlefield, is yes. Admittedly, when they first changed the stuff around, everyone goes through the stage of denial, of going, it's rubbish. But actually, Sanguinary Priests do lead strike forces. Look at the Omnibus, the one who is leading that is a Sanguinary Priest.
Yeah.
The Librarian Dreadnoughts are librarians, so why wouldn't they be
HQs? And
the
Dreadnoughts. And Dreadnoughts in the fluff and background are precious and revered because of their age and their experience and looked up to. So they're going to be HQs rather than elite slots, especially the librarians. And Blood Angels have a ton of librarians.
Mm.
You know, Mephiston, one of the central characters, is a librarian.
Yep.
So, yeah, it makes sense. Completely makes sense. I love it. again, for me, it's got that real sense of quickness in it.
Yep.
It's got that real sense of scary assault and, again, psychic superiority.
Yes.
If you take all those librarians, it can get quite powerful. You get quite a lot of warp charge dice, and it really does feel like how I picture the Blood Angels anyway. You know, playing you was like, oh, wow, this force is scary and I need to really think about how I'm going to engage them.
Mm.
Whereas before, I don't think I ever felt that way.
No.
So that's been really fun as an opponent to kind of experience. And we've only had that one game, but it was awesome. I love the new codex. It looks awesome. It's got great artwork. It's got great fluff.
Yeah.
The rules look pretty good from the flicking through. I mean, we mentioned some of the stuff, some of the tactics that kind of snuck in there.
And it's very difficult not to do a codex review when you're talking about a codex.
Especially one you play.
Yeah. I think with the new codex that's dropped, it's moved the Blood Angels fluff-wise on a bit more, which is really cool.
That's always nice.
Look for that. I'd hate to get a codex and they'd go backwards and Mephisto be dead and
Dante yeah, that's, be dead that's
and,
nasty,
and kill
isn't
everyone
it?
Off.
I think, yeah. Sorry, I was just going to say a Space Wolf thing that I really loved was just a tiny little sentence that said Logan Grimnar is like the supreme commander of the forces getting ready to repel the 13th Black Crusade, which was never in the other codex.
Yeah.
So it's like, oh, okay, that's really cool. There's even more reason to respect this guy.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It's really nice when a story kind of, and your heroes get better.
And just bumps it along a little.
Yeah.
Along a bit. Right.
Awesome. Okay, we'll round out this segment. I was going to say episode. We're not quite there.
Yeah,
we're getting there. We've been loving it. But hopefully you enjoyed that kind of codex review / talk about Blood Angels / ramble that we naturally do. Let us know how you found it. If you loved it, suggest a codex. And if we've got it, we'll do it.
Yeah.
I'm going to throw this out there, though. We've talked about him a little bit, and we talked about Dreadnoughts being so cool. Next episode, Bjorn the Fellhanded.
Yeah.
40K Spotlight, Bjorn the Fellhanded.
Okay. Let's appease the...
You can choose the next
side
segment.
Of this Twilight-style episode.
Yeah, a little bit. But yeah, so Bjorn the Fellhanded coming your way for the 40K Spotlight next episode. There's a nice teaser for you. We're going to take a break and come back with our last segment. See you in a bit. So welcome back, and this is our last segment of the show, Life in the Hobby.
Working with Forge World.
Yeah, and we're talking about working with Forge World. So me and Sam, over the kind of last year and maybe a little bit further on, have been buying up some Forge World, and we've worked with it for a little bit now and got various bits for different armies, and we thought it was a good time to talk about using Forge World and working with it.
Do you want to go through what Forge World bits you own now?
Yeah. Let's go through that at first. That sounds logical. So I mentioned these two quite a lot. I've got my Fire Raptor for my Space Wolves and my Dima Charon for my Nids. I've also got some bits of various marks for my converted Night Lords kill team. I've got the kill team, and they're based off First Claw, which are from the Aaron Dembski Bowden, or Bowden, however it's pronounced.
Bowden.
Night Lord series, which I loved, and during the books I was really geekily making notes of all the different armors that they were wearing, because they're renegades. They've kind of got like Mark 2 legs, Mark 4 bodies, Mark 7 heads, whatever. So I wrote down the notes as I kept going, and once I finished all the books, I then bought the bits I needed from eBay. eBay got in there again.
And we should get sponsored by eBay.
Yeah, they should sponsor me. I probably spend a lot on it. So I've got those bits that went together really well. So we'll talk about converting Forge World. I've also got a Red Scorpion librarian. I think his name's Seth Locke. That's a Inquisitor. Something Seth. the Red Scorpion Librarian model that they do, and I converted it into a Rune Priest for my Space Wolves, put a Cromlech backpack on it, and then pretty much left the model as is and put a Space Wolf shoulder pad on it.
Cool.
So he looks pretty cool. I've got a Space Wolf Dreadnought. Not Contemptor, but the Space Wolf Mark IV Dreadnought, whatever they call it, from Forge World. And that was my first purchase that I got when we were up at Warhammer World. What about you?
I've got a Contemptor Dreadnought, which is my first Forge World purchase. I've then also got the Las Cannon Turrets for Razorback, which is quite cool. I've also got the House Terran kit that Matt got me for my
for your knight.
For my knight.
Yeah, which looks very good, I must say.
Thank you very much. And I've also got the Forge World doors for my Grey Knights.
Oh yeah, for your Rhino.
Yes.
Yeah, or Razorback.
For my Razorback, yes. So that's cool. They're the kits that I have. Very small kits compared to what you've got. Mine are more, I like to use Forge World as add-ons rather than centerpieces.
Yeah, actually. Yeah. I guess I've kind of fallen for that way and you've gone a different way.
Yeah.
Which is cool.
So why did you decide to do Forge World? I'm interviewing you.
No. No, you're not. I host the show.
Well, I decided to get Forge World because it added an individual characteristic to each of my armies. it made it a little bit more special. So my Razorback for my Grey Knights is instantly standing out as being a Grey Knight Razorback because it's got those little bit different doors rather than just Decla transfers.
Yeah, and they are needed because they are painted purple, so confuse some people.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. They're purple knights. And I think the same for the House Terran. You could do it with transfers, but it just makes that a little bit more special. So when I take
3D
it down
effect.
When I take it down to Wayland, people are looking in it and
why is that different to other kits?
Exactly. And it's these are Forge World House Terran kits. Yeah. And I think it just adds that little bit extra, especially like the laser cannon turret for Las Cannon turret for the Razorback. And the Contemptor, again, is just something so different.
Yeah, exactly. It just stands out. I mean, for me, Forge World, why would you want it? Because it's awesome.
Yep.
It's awesome. The detail in the models are just even above Games Workshop. And their stuff's amazing. You know, the plastic kits they're producing now have got so much detail in them, like the new Sanguinity Priest model.
Absolutely.
You know, phenomenal model. But Forge World's just that next step up. It gives you access to new units, you know, the Fire Raptor and the Demacheron. I couldn't play them without the rules from the Imperial Armor books and from Forge World. So that obviously promoted me to getting the books. And like Sam said, you know, the centerpiece of an army. So although the Red Scorpion Librarian isn't a centerpiece, he is a character.
Yeah.
You know, the bits that I converted from my Night Lords are all four individual characters from a book. My Fire Raptor and my Demacheron are two large kits that really stand out in a big force. And I'm really looking forward to getting the Barbed Herodor as well. So, just having that big centerpiece that's just different, that's eye-catching, that's powerful, let's say, in the rules as well. Forge World's awesome. And check it out. If you don't own any Forge World yet, save up your pennies and get some because it's well worth it.
Absolutely.
But anyway, enough of a plug about Forge World.
Well, saving your pennies is a very nice segue to buying Forge World.
Buying from Forge World, yeah. It is expensive. You know, I've spent quite a lot of money, I guess, on not that much, really. You know, just between the Fire Raptor and the Demacheron, that's about just under £200 for two models.
Yep.
But I don't regret that.
No.
It's just you have to go in with your eyes open and realize how expensive it can be.
And then weigh up against, am I going to use it? Am I going to play it?
Like, yeah, exactly.
I understand why people have, like, Titans and Thunderhawks, etc. They look awesome, and I would love to have a Thunderhawk. It's just spending £1,000 plus on a model.
Well, they're not quite that
expensive. Sorry, £1,000 just under on a model. Really? I don't know if I'd get enough use out of it.
I think, you've got to weigh up everything that you're getting. You know, I really thought about that. Night Lord Kill Team is a good part of that. I didn't buy it straight from Forge World because you can only buy a kit.
Yeah.
So I did buy it off eBay, and it still cost me a lot of money, but that helped.
Yeah.
The Librarian model, to be honest, I saw in a White Dwarf, someone that had their kind of Golden Demon entry Space Wolf army being shown in White Dwarf, and he had that model. And with the slight conversion he'd done, it just looked really impacting. So I thought, do you know what, I want that, and I was willing to pay the little bit extra to get that character. in that model. So yeah, you have to go in with your eyes wide open. But like I said, it's awesome, and I think it's worth it.
Absolutely.
You can get Forge World directly from, obviously, their store, forgeworld.co.uk.
Yep.
You can buy it from some select stores. I think Wayland Games do.
Do they sell some select Forge ones?
World. I think they order it in for you, kind of thing.
Yeah, they order it in.
And I know there's others out there that do it.
I know in America, certainly, they all get together and order together and do one big order.
Yeah, as groups.
Because
and
of
stuff.
The postage.
But that's
costs.
From Forge World directly as well.
However, we, lucky in England, literally just have like a 10-minute walk to Forge World HQ. And we just,
that's not true.
Just walk into the factory, high five Frank, the factory floor manager, and just take any Forge World we want.
Yeah, yeah, that's all nonsense.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's a couple hours away.
It's like 2 hours
it's not
away.
It's not that far.
But, well, the trip to Mecca is always the best.
Yeah, that's why Carl makes it so much.
Yeah, yeah.
but yeah, you can buy Forge World directly from them or from other select stores, club together with people if there's a big shipping, if you're getting it overseas, always a good idea. And there is some floating around on eBay, even full kits, even new
kits.
Yeah,
Krieg's massive on eBay.
Yeah. You can, if you're really lucky and people are crazy, buy them from... bring and buy sales, can't you, Sam?
Yes, I can. That's how I picked up my 10 Death Corps of Krieg models. I picked them up for about £10.
Yeah,
which
crazy.
Is a ridiculous saving because they were painted pretty well.
Yeah. I think I say thank you for whoever that person was.
Thank you for whoever selling those. And if you have any more, feel free to send them my way.
So, right, you've made the commitment. You've decided you're either going to get something that makes a mundane unit stand out, like, you know, a Razorback, let's say, something that is, you know, could have four or five of them, and that one that you just want to be special. Or you might have gone full hog and bought a big kit that's going to be a centerpiece of your whole force. You've got it, and it comes. Forge World.
I would not buy a big kit for a first Forge World piece.
No, that's worth
so
saying.
My first kit was for
the Contemptor,
the Contemptor Dreadnought, and I think I glued 1 foot to the base. Tried to glue one leg to it, realised I was gluing the wrong section, cut off the pin that held it in place, tried sticking that leg onto the foot, messed it up so badly I threw it all back in the Forge World bag and put it underneath my bed and pretended it wasn't there.
Yeah, for like nearly a year.
Nearly a year because I was so afraid of building. And I never knew that I had to wash it, that I had to prep it,
none
of that. And it literally came out the worst you can ever think of. It's now built though, it's nice.
Yeah, no, it is. And you learn quickly with this stuff, you know?
Yeah.
Where I am now is crazy further than I was when I bought my first kit, the Space Wolf Dreadnought. And I did a similar thing. I just kind of glued bits together and looked at it and thought, that doesn't look quite right. And it was missing a claw on the arm, or it was this, or it was that.
I think I regret rushing into it because it means that my Dreadnought, the Contemptor, is in quite a boring pose. It's just sort of standing a little bit leaning forwards with its arms out, looking like it's trying to get a hug. but it, you know what? It's just like your first painted model. I've still got my first painted model because it's that awful that I want to know where I've come from.
Well, I mean, if I put it this way, we did a review of the newish GW paints, you know, the Blood for the Blood God, et cetera, and we spoke about in that episode about them being the next step of painting. Once you get past that base level of painting, you can move on to this stuff, and it's a bit more of a tricky technique and a bit of a different material, but gives an amazing effect.
Yep.
Forge World's like that in the modelling. You know, you build enough plastic kits and then you're experienced enough in cutting pieces, in modelling, in posing.
Green stuff,
lots of things like that. Building Forge World. I mean, prep work is key. I mean, Sam's already alluded to that. You know, it comes in a bag, all the pieces kind of on these blocks of resin, just kind of, I guess, holding it all together so it doesn't get broken up and rattle around too much. And you need to cut those pieces off. And then the first thing you need to do is wash the resin. The reason for that is the oil, the lubricant, whatever it is.
That allows them to separate the mold from the resin.
Kind of is still in the resin. And if you don't wash it, it'll still build fine with the super glue. It'll still hold. And, you know, obviously, if you're doing pinning, it doesn't really matter what's over it. But when you come to spraying it, the paint just won't hold.
Yeah, I made that mistake too. I then sprayed it. It went awful. A load of the paint flecked off. I got a stiff brush and just basically brushed it all the most it could get off.
Yeah.
Then washed it. in water and then resprayed it, and it hasn't got all the paint off. But actually, for a Def Comet Dreadnought, it worked out pretty well.
Yeah,
but
yeah, you need to wash the stuff. I mean, yeah. I've heard lots of people do it in different ways. I guess one of the best tips I could give you is if you're doing it in a sink, do it in a bowl in the sink.
Yeah,
because if that plug slips out, you know, and that dreadnought claw or that skull or whatever that little piece is that's going to kind of just be the tip of the iceberg on the already awesome kit goes down the drain, you're going to
cry,
swear, punch, shout, jump out a window. I don't know. it's a bad thing.
I don't know, so, but it's that one clip that holds the wings on your Thunderhawk. I think I'd jump out the window.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I'm in Forge World, it's going to be that one clip.
Yeah, definitely. But washing it is key. I mean, I know one guy who washes it in the bag.
Yeah.
So he trims it all off, gets rid of all the excess and the little blocks and things, which are great for keeping for tank traps.
Yeah.
Little tip for you as well, especially the bigger ones. And he keeps it in the bag, just puts a couple of holes in it, and then dunks it in like a washing up bowl. So again, nothing can come out. The holes are not big enough for anything to come out of the bag. And then just kind of washes it in the bag, gives it a bit of a shake, and then lifts it out of the water, drains out the holes. Bob's your uncle. We're talking about washing. It would probably be good to say what in. Warm water.
Yeah.
With warm, a bit of soap. Not too much soap.
Yeah.
Don't cover them in fairy liquid or anything.
No.
Because then it will be soaked in fairy liquid. But just, you know, warm water with a bit of soap. You might want to scrub it with a toothbrush if it's quite a fine bit and you just want to make sure that stuff gets off.
Yeah.
But most of the time, I think I've just really dunked it in water, left it there for 20 minutes.
Yeah, then towel it down with a bit of kitchen roll.
Yeah, just taking the wet off, and then you're pretty much ready to start building.
Yeah.
Now, I've had a couple of big kits, but I haven't done a single bit of pinning.
No. I haven't either. I know a lot of people swear by it.
Oh, yeah. And I mean, it's you know always going to be stronger if you do pin things. But I've found that with a decent super glue, I use Loctite.
Yeah, me too.
It's quite a well-known one. And it works brilliantly, holding the resin together. Plastic glue is not going to work because it's not plastic. It's
tried
resin.
It.
You've got to look at that join, at that arm, at that leg, whatever it is, and think how much weight is on that area. And if it's quite a thin piece that potentially is going to get broken in transit or get knocked a little bit and something might happen to it, then you might want to pin it.
So I know a few of the guys who drill out the base of the aerials on the big 30K tanks.
Yeah.
And they drill out the bases, put pins in them because they want them to be a little bit more stronger than just resin. And that's quite a good idea. And turrets and stuff, which is cool. I think it's very much situational on what you've got and what you're going to transport it in. There's nothing really on my contemptor that I feel I'd need to pin.
Yeah. I think I thought about pinning the body to the legs of the Demacheron. Yeah, I thought about pinning the body and the legs of the Demacheron together, but I thought, I'll try the glue in it and it's going to stay at home for a little while I paint it and things put it together and it's holding strong.
Yeah.
I've even kind of almost tried to
snap it.
Not tried to snap it, but just to see if it's a little bit wobbly or a little bit loose or likely to get damaged. And unless I drop it, which would there'd be a lot more problems than just the body coming off.
Yeah.
It's all right. So I haven't bothered doing that, but that's something to look into. YouTube will definitely have a video of someone pinning some Forge World, I'm sure.
Yep.
So check that out if that's what you want to do. Magnetization is something that's quite popular now. If you're getting a dreadnought and you want 5 or 6 arm options so you can have all the different weapons, you want to look into magnets. Again, I've never really done that.
No.
Not even with any GW stuff, really. I'm not really one for magnets.
I've got a few bits.
But look into that if that's what you're up for. But once you've got a kit built, sometimes there's mold lines. I don't know if you've found this on any of your pieces. On most of them, I haven't found that many, but it's just things on where it's the edge of the mold potentially.
Yeah.
There's just like a thin line that you just need to take off.
Yeah, just scalpel.
Yeah, yeah. Well, do you know what? I bought the mold line remover from Games Workshop, and it's brilliant. Like, I really recommend it as a tool.
Yeah.
It's a little bit on the expensive side because it's got Games Workshop printed on it.
Yeah.
But it was really handy with the Demacheron. The tail comes in two halves. So I put that together, and first there was the line of the join, which we'll come back to, but there was a long line of mould going all the way up it. So on the edge of the tail, all the way to the tip of the claw. And literally, I just got this mould line remover, and it's like using a scalpel, I guess, but just a little bit safer.
Yeah.
I can't really explain why it is, but it just is. And you just run it across the mould line. It just takes it back and takes it back until it's literally just not there, and just removes that excess bit of resin, and gives you a smooth line. Once I'd done that, then I used liquid green stuff to paint over the joint.
Okay.
And then again, once that had all dried, left it overnight, I just used the mold line remover just lightly over it so it wasn't too sticky outy as it was. And then once I sprayed it, it just looked smooth. You can't tell that the tail's two pieces.
Yeah.
And that extra little bit of work and time I took on that model has really paid off. Because I'd hate for someone to look at that model and go, oh, yeah, you can still see the line of where the tail was, you know, put together.
Yeah.
And it's all because I haven't bothered to do the little bit of extra work.
It's the type of model you spend that little bit extra bit of time on because it is expensive. It is going to be the drawing piece for people to look at your army.
Yeah, completely.
Yeah.
Completely. I mean, other than that, I've talked about gluing and pinning and magnetizing if you want to do that. One thing that you can find with resin, and I found this with my Fire Raptor, and it's kind of notoriously a bit of a pig of a kit, it can sometimes come out warped, whether that's happened in transit or whether that's happened just from the mold the weight of itself. You're never quite sure. But one of the sides of the main body of my Fire Raptor was bent, and that's because in the middle of it is two thin parts that are where the ball turret goes in. Right. If you're not sure what I'm talking about, look at the Fire Raptor, type it in Google, go to Forge World, have a look.
Or go to our Facebook page because there'll be a photo of it on.
That's true. We've got a photo of it on there already. But yeah, there's kind of two thin bits of resin that are where the top and the bottom of the hole is for the side turret. And it was slightly warped up. So again, I just put it in hot water. This is after washing it, so just that piece. And a little bit hotter than warm. I wouldn't say, you don't pour a kettle on it, but, fairly hot. Leave it in there for 10, 15 minutes. And then I just got it out, pushed it flat, and held it there for about 10, 15 minutes on some kitchen roll. And once it had dried, straight as anything.
Yeah, okay.
I've seen, or heard rather, people using hair dryers.
Yeah.
That scares me a little bit because if you overheat it, it can snap quite easily.
Yeah.
So the hot water seems a bit safer to me.
Okay.
But there's something. Sometimes the blades or the really thin bits can come warped, and that can be a bit frustrating. So that's how you deal with that.
Cool.
I think. Shall we move on to painting?
Yep.
I think that's all the building. Right. I need a drink before I cough again. Do you want to start us off with painting?
Yeah, so
maybe different.
My first experience was the Contemptor with painting, and as it was Def Company, I actually used it as quite a good way of testing out some new techniques. I found that with a good primer, they paint exactly like any other model. It's scary because it is that one centerpiece, and you want to do it really well, but nothing. It's one of those things where if you let it scare you, then you'll probably mess up. If you just go at it like any other model, any other dreadnought, any other flyer, any other man, then just take your time, carry on.
Yeah, for me, I haven't actually painted that much of this Forge World. That's the thing, like my Bjorn model's not painted yet. Night Lords aren't painted yet.
Yeah, I know.
The Demer's about halfway painted. That's probably the furthest I've got
with
any model. And again, as long as you've done that prep work, as long as you've washed the model, as long as you've got rid of the mold lines, done a bit of liquid green stuff on some of the joins and made them smooth, all the stuff we've just mentioned in the building section. Once that undercoat goes on, it's any other model.
Yeah.
It's just a really detailed, good model, and you want to take your time on detail. The same way that you probably spend more time on a HQ than you would on a bog-standard troop.
Yeah.
You know, if you're painting guardsmen, I doubt the commissar is painted to the same standard as an infantryman.
No, of course.
You know, the commissar's going to be far greater because he's a standout figure. And whether it's a piece on a rhino or a massive kit like the Fire Raptor,
yeah,
or some of the big tanks that you can get, yeah, you're always going to want these models and these bits to stand out because that's why you bought them.
Of course.
They're that extra awesomeness that Forge World brings. And yeah, you're going to spend your time on it, so just don't rush it. And it's exactly the same, like Sam said, once that base coat goes on and it's taken well because you've washed the model properly, and all your prep work's done, it's going to be exactly the same process as any other model. And you've probably already got the paint scheme because it's part of an army that you're adding to. You don't tend to start an army unless you're doing 30k, of course, with a Forge World purchase, like Sam said. You know, my Fire Raptor was pretty much the last thing I bought for my Space Horse. The Demacheron was quite a long way down the list. So I knew what paint job I was going to use and knew what paints I was going to use. And yeah, just take your time and make it look awesome.
Playing with Forge World.
Yeah, let's move into playing with Forge World. So we've bought the awesome unit, we've built it and built it well, we've painted it and taken our time, so it really stands out and is just awesome model that you could put into Golden Demon and win a trophy.
So I pretty much run all my Forge World as normal 40k. Normal 40k, so I don't use the Imperial Armour books. Only because my Condemnator has got additional rules in the Imperial Armour books, but I don't own the Imperial Armour book, and I know a few of my friends have got them. I could probably take photocopies, but I don't run it enough to warrant me effectively pulling my finger out and going to get it.
It might be worth it now.
Yeah,
of the changes.
It's because of the changes. It might be worth it at the moment because it's a Death Company Dreadnought. I just run it as a Death Company Dreadnought.
Yeah,
they're pretty awesome anyway. If it was like a Fire Raptor, I wouldn't run it as a Storm Raven because it's completely different. But they're very similar roles. They're not. It's not like a special. I think I'll get an Invol save if I run it as a Contemptor.
Invol, higher toughness on front.
Yeah,
like it's they're pretty awesome. To be fair.
Yeah.
I mean the weapons in the fists and things like that.
Yeah.
But yeah. I mean, playing with Forge World is often quite powerful.
Yeah.
The units tend to have a bit of a buff over normal Games Workshop rules.
So like the Contemptor that has a 5-up invul, my Death Company Dreadnoughts don't.
Yeah, exactly. And various other things. And I think for a long time, people used to be quite scared of playing Forge World, and it was definitely a big no-no in tournaments until probably early last year, really.
Well, when they made...
when Sixth probably dropped.
Yeah, when they made...
That wasn't last year, but...
When they made Forge World or Super Heavies viable for real games.
Yeah, with Escalation and Lords of War and all of that stuff that we've seen change over this last year or so. It's more open and people are more open to it because it is really fun. I mean, the Imperial Armour books are great. They've got great campaigns in them normally and missions, so you can change up your gaming, which is really fun. And bring a new unit. You know, that was one of our reasons why you would buy Forge World, because you get to play a new unit. And they do tend to be pretty strong, but I've come to realise that they're fairly balanced. They're not great game breaking. That there's you know, by bringing a Contemptor, you're not breaking the game. By bringing a Fire Raptor, you're not breaking the game. They seem that they're well thought out. They've got good rules that make them a good asset to have, but aren't unbreakable or unkillable. They just make your games more interesting, and if you spent all that money on it, why would you not play with it?
No, of course, absolutely.
I think we'll round out there. We could carry on and bore you to death, but I think we've had a good episode, and we'll take a break and come back with our final thoughts. But here we are at the end of episode 5. I hope you've enjoyed it. We felt very rusty at the beginning, and I think we've maybe got some of that rust out. I think we've had a fairly good episode. We've tried some new stuff. I hope you've enjoyed it. Again, please give us that feedback. Please let us know what you think of us. Give us those iTunes reviews. chat to us on our Facebook page. We'd love to be approached more and more and get segments in that you want to see or you're interested in, as well as just ones that we like.
Yeah.
I don't know. What highlight of the episode? Why not?
Highlight of the episode, Blood Angels. Obviously, I love Blood Angel Codex, so talking about that was really cool. Actually, it struck me, I never really clicked how much had actually changed until I had to go and look through everything and make notes on what had changed. Yeah. I was just like, okay, well, that's moved. That's gone down in points. That's moved. That's gone up. That's got better. That's got worse. And I didn't realise how much had happened until I had to go and really look.
Yeah.
But no, it's cool. I really want to play Blood Angels right now. We should have a game.
Yeah, not right now, though.
Well, it's only 1 o'clock.
Yeah, no. But yeah, I've really enjoyed the episode. I think talking about Codex was something that we haven't done before, and I hope we did it well. Talking about Forge World is always fun. Kind of, we're not experts in it. You know, like we said, we haven't pinned, we haven't magnetized, but we have got some experience in it, and hopefully we've passed that on to you. Something else that we're going to do new is we're going to kind of give you a bit of a teaser into the next episode. So we've already told you that we're going to look at Bjorn the Fellhanded for our 40k spotlight and the story that goes along with him as such a iconic character in 40k. And we're also going to look at missions and different ways of playing 40k for our life in the hobby. So yeah, you can look forward to that, and we'll see you next time.
See you next time.
See you later.
Ready when you are.
Cool, so we were recording?
Yep.
Oh, hang on. I've got potato in my teeth.
I'm just going to have a bit of
time. We're eating Chinese food.
We haven't got sponsored by Chinese food.
Yeah, that'd be awesome. Right, here we go.
Right. Whenever.
I'm trying to remember how we go. Let me start recording again.
Yeah, I want to try and get a burp in.
That nearly nice. That was nearly bad.
Better? Right, cool.
Yeah, we've got them out of the way. Cool.
News from Terror.
Yeah. It's Skylar. Oh, no, that was actually close to singing. No, scratch that.
That's definitely not getting cut out.
Good. Oh, no.
Between two guys.
Yeah. I think we've been rambling a bit too much. So, painting. Imperial Fist Ben and everything Ben.
Yeah.
Everything 40k Ben. It's actually Demacheron.
No, it's Dharma.
No. Dharma. Genuinely. Dharma. It's based off the Latin word Demacharius.
No, that's fine. You can say that, but it's Dharma.
It's Demacheron.
Latin is now a dead language, so it's now Dharma.
No. Anyway. What's the time now? We on?
Yeah.
Cool. Get my breath back walking upstairs, man. I'm so unfit.
Cool.
Here we go.
Third segment. Am I doing it? Are you?
No, I'm doing it.
Well, I'm waiting for you.
Well, you keep talking.
Sorry.
I'm trying to leave a gap, you see.
Okay. Is that long of a gap?
And welcome back to our third segment, 40k Spotlight. This one we're kind of giving a new thing. I'm going to start this again.
What are you going to say?
I'm out of breath again. Stairs. It's quite scary, really. Right, so yeah, sorry, Bjorn.
Hey, sports fans.
You can keep that one.
All right, good.
I'll let you keep that one.
A really close rivalry with the very similarly. Why can't I say similarly?
That's not how you say it.
Similarly.
Similarly. Similarly. Now I can't say it.